It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theriot and Mary Jo are here. They are back from their hosting duties at Build, have lots to talk about, including the inside on Project Volterra. There's a new dev box. NetMAUI, his general availability, that's a big deal. And Windows 11 version 22H2 is here. It's all coming up next with a lot more on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theriot and Mary Jo Foley, episode 778, recorded Wednesday, May 25th, 2022. Undo your ink. Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/windows. And make sure to mention WW30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. And by Tanium. Tanium unites operations and security teams with a single platform that identifies where all your IT data is, patches every device you own in seconds, and implements critical security controls, all from a single pane of glass. Are you ready to protect your organization from cyber threats? Learn more at tanium.com/twit. And by Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, to deliver multi-layer security and remote manageability with the Intel vPro platform, powered by 12th generation Intel Core processors. Learn more at cdw.com/intel client. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft just off their appearance on the Build stage. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theriot. Very important. Paul goes on the left. Mary Jo Foley on the right. Paul is, of course, at Theriot.com. Mary Jo Foley at ZDNet. I guess they got it wrong at Build, huh?
They did. I didn't even notice. And then after someone pointed it out, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know? It's so fun. I mean, it's completely arbitrary, but it's kind of funny that, you know.
It's a habit.
Yeah. It's a habit. Mary Jo should always be looking to her right to see Paul Theriot. That's just the way it is.
I'm always right, so that's why I'm
up. Oh, there you go. That explains it. Yeah. And Paul, I got to fix your lower third because you are no longer.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a nickname for Mexico City? Like, does it have a...
Like CDMX?
CDX. Or
no, that's
Max.
The
what do you always
name?
Put?
But you, isn't there like the
CDMX.
City? Tacoville, USA or something? There's got to be... No, I guess it's
I
not
I don't
bad.
Think so. I don't know. I
can
outpoll a few people there, but I... I don't think that's going to work.
It's like calling San Francisco Frisco. It's a no.
Oh, definitely a no. Definitely a no.
So you're looking for like definitely a Beantown no. type thing.
No, not Beantown.
What well, I mean like for no. Boston.
Boston, yeah. Like Beantown. Yeah, what do they?
No.
Yeah, don't call it Beantown. Definitely.
No.
That's
don't
out.
Call it Beantown.
Well, they should have a name. I bet it does have a name among its, you know, amongst its.
Right, like the Big Apple. What's
yeah,
the equivalent?
Like the Big Apple.
Right. I don't know. It used
Yo
to be
soy
the DF,
Mexico you know, City or
the District Federal.
No. You're thinking formal names. We're talking nicknames.
But people would refer to it as the DF. You know, like back
the DF. Okay,
but now it's
the DF. I like it.
That's like a like an East Germany thing. Like we don't really use that anymore.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We need it. You know, that's all right. We'll work on it. We shall. Oh God! I just erased whatever I did. Oh, man. I was just stalling to get the lower third fixed, and somehow I've munged it up. I've lower McCungied it. Oh, yeah. I should really save in duplicate, shouldn't I? I'll let you do it, John. We just won't have them be anywhere.
There you go.
You're nowhere.
I feel like in limbo. That's good.
There you go. LDF.
LDF.
That sounds like Latter-day somethings. I don't know what. Anyway, you had a good visit. You came back. I saw your, you know, we followed your Instagram food blog and welcome home.
That's all we did was go shopping and eat.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, good thing to do in Mexico City.
Well, I mean, I would have enjoyed relaxing, maybe seeing something.
But you will next time. This was getting ready. So, Build
is Build Over, or is it as there's a date, another day today?
Another day.
Tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Okay. But yesterday was Satya's keynote, which I maybe made a mistake not streaming. Was there anything very exciting in it?
We talked about that yesterday. If it was good or bad that we didn't stream it on Windows Weekly.
And?
So, you know what? It was a keynote for developers, right? Very developer heavy, which was great, right? That's what it should have been.
I thought it was great. I don't know that it would have mixed well with...
And it didn't have the audience. Big bang excitement stuff, right? Like, like not like a WWDC or Google I.O. They didn't show a lot of futures. They showed a few things that were futures, but not a lot, right?
Mm. No, and not what we would call kind of consumer-oriented.
Right, right.
Which I think would have sunk it for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think they... Other years with Build, they've tried to do more of a Google I.O., WWDC type keynote. And people criticized it because they're like, this is a show for developers, right? And we want developer news. So this whole thing was all developer news all the time. Like, there was nothing you would say wasn't developer news, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's what I liked about it.
Same.
Build is typically my favorite Microsoft show. It's because of the developer focus. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day when Build started, whatever year that was, 2011, 2012, it was Windows, you know, Windows Phone. Right. Mm-hmm. IoT was just coming, starting to happen, or embedded or whatever. And, of course, Azure was a thing, you know, and the tables have flipped a little bit. It's, you know, largely Azure these days. But Windows got a lot of time, I thought.
It did, I thought,
generally. Yeah.
Yep. You know what they did this year? I don't know if you noticed this. Satya starts out and he's like, here are the 10 tech things I'm going to talk about. I love that they did that because it helped you follow along where he was going. Because sometimes, I got to say, I feel like he's a very nice man, but he wanders when he gives these keynotes, right? Like, you're like, what are we talking about now? Like, where are we going with this? I don't see where we're going. And he just had these 10 talking points and he just went through them. Boom, 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 boom. Here's the 10 things, right?
I don't mean to completely sidetrack this, but McCungie is not like McCungie. It's when we're like McCungie.
We'll fix
it. He can't unsee this. It's going to distract him.
Is it M-A-C? Is that what it is?
Yeah, M-A-C-U-N-G-I.
Is it a capital C?
No.
Okay, like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like McCungle if I do that, though.
It does.
Sure. Okay. Well, Google Maps, depending on which street you're on, we'll call it, because their roads around here are McCungie and Lower McCungie. We'll say McCungie.
McCungie. Oh, I know. I love it when
you turn around the corner and it says McCungie, and it's...
Yeah. I love when Google Maps attempts to pronounce things. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to put Township.
Golf shop. It looks like it's like McCungie's Golf Emporium is what that looked like before.
Yeah.
Okay,
how's this? Like
McCungie, the good Scottish township of McCungie. And by the way, we're going to call it Mexico Tenochtitlan from now on. That's the original
name. Simple name that is easy to spell.
It's very catchy.
Yeah.
It's. I like that you went with the Aztec, by the way.
Yeah.
That's good.
Let's go with the Aztec name. During the 19th century, this all comes from our friend 70715-1002. his CompuServe address.
Sure.
It was,
I know it's a him.
We don't know. But I know he lives in Mexico, or they live in Mexico. La Ciudad de los Palacios, the city of the palaces. Lately, La Ciudad de la Esperanza, city of
the original
hope.
Venice.
Informally, Mexico City is known as... We got to go there now because it got cut off. DF. Oh, that's DF. Okay.
DF. Yeah. See, people still call it that.
DF. Or
old
capital. DF. DF. That's what they call the McCungie Township. The McCungie.
DF.
DF.
LMA.
LMA. La Mac. All right.
Lower
now,
Mac.
Lower Mac. Now, let us. Continue on with the boring. I mean, the fascinating.
Let us actually start.
Let us talk about Build 2022.
I think you're going to care about some of these.
The biggest, I'll tell you what, the story that, the only story that came out of it in mainstream media was this little Mac Mini-like ARM dev machine. Mm-hmm. That was
this says so much about our industry. You know that, like people are like, oh look, it looks like a Mac Mini. Let's write about that.
Yeah. It's Project Volterra, which sounds like a Marvel comic universe evil villain.
I was going to say Star Trek.
Yeah,
Volterra. I think Italian city, isn't it?
Yeah, probably something like that. It's Lower Mukunji. Yeah. It's the nickname for Lower Mukunji. So it's a dev kit.
It's the original Aztec name of Lower Mukunji.
What kind of, is it a Qualcomm processor? What is it?
Yes.
Okay.
We don't know what the processor is, but we know it's Qualcomm.
Okay. Okay.
They haven't told any of the tech specs yet to the public, but they said it's coming out later this year. They showed us pictures of it, a mock-up of it. It looks like a little box. You can stack them up and or put them in racks. As you see on our header on Notion, that's a picture of it at the top.
I will show everybody our Notion header just so that you can see it. It's kind of alongside Satya. It's kind of cute. Why are there two?
They're showing you can stack them.
Oh, okay. Right? So there's two one on top of the other is what we're seeing.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Why would you stack them?
If you wanted multiple,
stacked. Come on.
You wanted multiple boxes. I don't know.
Okay.
Working in conjunction.
And how did they say a price or anything like that?
No.
No.
Nope.
They did not. Hmm. No. Real
I like that
specs.
Leo has instantly gotten to everything they haven't talked
about.
Yes,
he has.
Because this is the big conversation. No, it's good. It's
right.
Because same thing. What processor is this? What's the point of this? When's it coming out? How much does it cost?
Yeah. Now, the one thing we can guess on is the point of it, right? Which we were talking about before the show started, right? So when Microsoft talked, right? Well, they gave few details. Right? They gave us a sizzle video, right? Like they showed a very expensive to produce sizzle video from Panos and team about what this thing looked like, spinning through space, things exploding, right? And then I'm like, okay, what about the specs, guys? the thing they highlighted about it was it's going to have a CPU, GPU, NPU. NPU is neural processing unit.
Is this the video?
This is the video.
Oh my God. This is absurd.
Remember, this is like all the Surface videos, right? Nonsense.
It is.
It was made by the same team that made Prometheus, I guess. I don't know what the point of this is.
They spent a ton of money.
They spent a lot of money on this video.
It's crazy.
And it's just rocks breaking up and then spitting out this box, which is completely bland.
A little square box.
Johnny Ive would go, what is the point of this?
Made of plastic.
It's got a Snapdragon. Well, we know it's a Snapdragon, although...
Neural processing unit there.
as you point out in your article, there is no kind of desktop-class Snapdragon until later next year, right?
Right.
Made from plastic recycled.
Right, recycled. There's all
multiple
the ports.
Multiple ports.
Lots of ports all over it, right?
Okay. Stacking design for desktops and rack deployment.
Yeah.
But this is a dev kit. It's not... Or is it intended for a network operations center? Is it... Oh, look, you can have three of them.
They're promoting it right now as a dev kit.
Why would you want three then?
We don't know.
Is it three times faster?
We don't really know.
Let's speculate about the point. What's the point, right? So we have discussed this amongst ourselves because Microsoft has never really come out and explained it. So what was your theory, Mary Jo?
So my theory is they've spent almost a decade, if not a full decade, working on Windows on ARM. It still has never taken off. There are a couple machines out there that have ARM processors. They underwhelm for the most part, right? Like they don't even give you the right battery life or the power consumption savings you're supposed to get with ARM. So Microsoft doesn't want to throw away all this work they've done on ARM. And especially now that everyone's saying Apple's doing ARM, what are you doing, Microsoft? So they're like, what could we do with Windows on ARM that would make sense? Okay, what if we made it an AI development machine? Like what if we said it's a development machine for the development community and it's going to be extra well suited to building AI applications because it has an onboard NPU, neural processing unit.
NPU,
So I think they've given up on making it a general purpose computer. I think
But the Pixel 6 has an NPU. The iPhone has an NPU. All M1 chips have an NPU.
You know what doesn't have an NPU?
What?
Yeah, but x86 chips do not.
Not any Intel things.
Yeah. And neither do AMD, right?
I mean, maybe that comes, right?
13th generation. Right.
Yeah. So I think that could be it. I like this.
I like that idea, but I guess I would just asterisk the bit about them giving up. I don't think they've given up on ARM as a general purpose computing platform.
You don't?
I believe
Well, clearly
that,
not. I mean, you don't make this if...
Not because of this.
Although we don't know what the chip is. So what if the chip is the next gen Nuvia? Is that the name of the company?
Yeah.
A Nuvia based chipset. And it's coming out very late in the year because that's when the first samples are happening. And it is aimed at developers. It may be a little expensive because they're new. But that if Nuvia based chipsets do what Qualcomm says they will do, it and not the Core i5 nonsense they talked about 2 years ago, but actual core whatever performance. I don't see any reason why Snapdragon or ARM couldn't be a mainstream Windows platform, but we just have to let that happen to see. I think I've been at the forefront of the stuff we have now does not work.
ARM stuff, you mean?
Yeah, on Windows, right? Yeah. It's just no way. But there's been such an investment. They bought that company. They have this roadmap. It's happening. You know, we'll see.
The fact that they emphasize stacking, which makes absolutely no sense in a normal desktop dev environment, but makes a lot of sense in a network network center.
Well, because these things could be, in other words, you develop those things locally on one and then deploy them to some data center cloud.
Right. So that sounds to me like their plans for it. And this makes sense with ARM because it's a low power processor, is in a network environment. And that you might put an NPU in there because now, like the Tensor chip that Google offers and others, and Microsoft does too, don't they have TPUs for Azure? Like that would be something you could offer as a network center.
Right. So the diagram they showed that kind of explains at a very, very high level what they're trying to do. They showed a box with a CPU, GPU, MPU, and then the fourth thing that looked like a port was Azure, right? And they're like, this is what we want you to think about, like using the cloud as like a processor, right? And you do some of the processing in the cloud, you do some locally, right? And
then that's interesting.
That's kind of how they presented it at the
very
high
level. So this could be the thin client, maybe.
Maybe.
Huh.
Maybe.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, the best, if you want to watch something from Build that shows how they think this could work, the Stevie Batiche demo, I forget what the session was. You saw that yesterday, Paul, right? Like where he's showing the facial recognition running on one of these boxes, right? And how
it was the main one. If you search for Windows, it has Panos Panay, Stevie, I think Kevin
Gallo.
Thank you, jeez.
Yep.
I think it was that one. That was actually a very good session. And if you care about Windows, definitely watch that one.
They were showing, they were saying, if you try to build an AI application these days on an existing PC, it's so resource constrained, right? And it's just maxing out your GPU. But what if you had a processing unit that had CPU, GPU, TPU, and then you could also access Azure as part of the dev environment? This is what it would look like. And then they showed them training a facial recognition model locally and in combination with Azure, right? And how much faster it was. I keep forgetting the
number they use, but people who have kind of come up and seen how hardware has evolved, we talk about this. You get a GPU and it offloads those activities from the CPU, right? Way back in Longhorn timeframe when we were talking about hardware accelerated graphics, that was the story that, this is what was going to happen. And now that's very common. And now they're talking about doing the same thing, but with an MPU for AI, ML.
And the Azure and this new Azure Compute co-processor.
Right.
So, that's interesting. So at this point, the ARM chip is really just a controller. It's not going to be doing a lot of work.
It's that architecture, right? I think that's we call this a hybrid architecture now. It's just been the ARM architecture for a long time. But this notion of, you look at the map of like an M1 chip and how it's like, this part's the CPU, this is the GPU, this is the MPU, this is the RAM, this is the, that's how these things are designed. And I hope it's not just that. I feel like that probably is the primary purpose of this particular box. Mm-hmm. But I still hold out hope is maybe the wrong word. I still believe that ARM will succeed as a mainstream compute platform on Windows. You know, Dart, obviously, it succeeded everywhere else.
I don't think that's the intent at all. I think they're maybe acknowledging that that's not going to be happening. But they're envisioning.
Connected. I know. I think
they're envisioning a new hybrid.
Two different things.
A new hybrid form of computing.
Yeah.
So here's the question. So we don't know what this chipset is, right? So we've been talking. Is it the 8CX? Is it this Nuvia thing? It could be something completely different. This could literally be designed for this new workload, this new type of AI type thing. It could just become, you know, not completely unrelated because it's ARM or whatever, but it's just unrelated to the mainstream PC stuff that they've been doing so far. I mean, although it's going to be running Windows 11 on ARM. I mean, it's not like it's going to be running some Azure Sphere. Or whatever.
Yeah, but it kind of is what I have been thinking all along Microsoft would do, which is basically introduce a thin client. They don't want to call it a thin client, but a terminal almost for your desktop, like remember Larry Ellison's Think PC.
Yeah. Sure. The network. Mm-hmm.
The network.
What do you call it? The network computer.
Computer, yeah. And so it sits on your desk. It has some compute power, but not a huge amount, enough to draw windows on the screen, that kind of thing. And then has additional co-processing, and much of it, it sounds like, in the cloud. Is this Azure Compute? Is this something new?
There is a piece that's new on the Azure side.
Yeah, but it's not a new Azure Compute itself is not new. I mean,
Azure Compute's not new.
As a co-processor for a desktop PC?
Well, yes, that is new, I believe.
So I think that's very interesting. It's possible. Maybe I'm giving it too much weight, but it sounds like they're announcing a new PC architecture.
I don't know. The Raspberry Pi is today more powerful than the NC thing that Larry Ellison thought about in the 1990s.
Right.
You know, we have phones that are more powerful.
Far more powerful.
Everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean... I think the point of any AI-based anything these days from a client perspective is that you can do a certain amount of it on the client. It's better when you can interact with that thing in the sky, you know, which in this case is Azure. I think one of the big innovations that occurred in recent years with phones especially is AI happening on the device without any need for connectivity or for the privacy concerns for hitting an online service or whatever. So I don't think the point of this is like an Azure client per se. I think that's going to be an element of it. But
Azure compute because you don't have that much horsepower in the box.
Well, we don't know.
I mean, clearly, that's the problem. You know, the thing is the iPhone's processor is the same processor. The iPhone 12's processor is the same processor as the M1. So you have... And which is, no one doubts, competitive desktop processor. So no one doubts that ARM architecture could be powerful enough. They keep going to Qualcomm. That's the problem. Qualcomm hasn't demonstrated that yet. But what if what if they're saying, okay, well, we can make Windows on ARM okay, and then with the addition of Azure Compute, and a GPU and an NPU. Didn't he say something about Adobe?
I'm really getting sidetracked by this ARM thing.
I don't think it's a sidetrack. I feel like this is Microsoft saying this is where you don't think it's a big deal for them, that this isn't where they're going.
No. I think Mary Jo has kind of hinted at not hinted because she doesn't know. I think she's in the right space for what this is for. I just don't think this is the future of ARM on Windows or Windows and ARM.
Okay.
I think these are two different things. This will be an okay general purpose computer, probably. We don't know what this is.
But it's not intended for that at all?
Well, okay. So I saw Rich Turner or somebody from Microsoft say yesterday on Twitter, all devs will be interested in the power of this box. You won't be disappointed. So I don't know if they're going to position it as a dev box in general, right?
Huh, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
I don't know. There's more things we don't know than. No, so here's the thing you were asking about, Leos. It's not Azure Compute that's new. They talked about this thing called the Azure Execution Provider in Onyx, which has to do with a neural network runtime, right? So they're connecting the stuff happening on the client through this pattern they're calling hybrid loop up to the Azure through this new Azure execution provider in Onyx. So it's not something like a new piece of Azure.
No, but what they described is using Adobe, for instance.
Yeah.
And it's AI capability. It's, what do they call it? Smart something. So you're running Adobe, you're running Photoshop on this thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you need AI powered something, it connects with the Azure component. Or this was unclear. It sounded like maybe the Azure component is used for training and then you download it. But if that's the case, you don't need to ever be connected to Azure because you ship the training models.
Right.
I think the nice justification they made for this involved the MPU itself, right? They were talking, I'm going to get the number wrong, but if we had to do if we had to do this AI, whatever it was, maybe it was the facial recognition thing, against the CPU, it would have pegged the CPU.
Right.
And that would have generated heat. Everything would have slowed down. It would have been horrible. We do this against the MPU. It is a single digit percentage, nothing. You don't even notice it's happening.
It's analogous to a GPU, right? This is the new third chip that's going to, you know, GPUs come with all computers now. And then they say NPUs will come with all computers now.
Right.
That's independent of ARM, right?
Yeah, right. They're saying MPUs for whatever processor at some point will be on all computers.
Right.
Yep.
Which means Intel must be working on that.
Yeah, they're hinting like this is not just an ARM thing. Like this is coming to Intel too.
Yeah, so. It's ARM. It's here now on ARM. That's maybe the point of this.
Mm-hmm. And then, so really, the Azure is for developers. They're going to use that to train models, load the models, and then when you ship the software, you ship with the model, and the end user doesn't have to go out of the computer.
Yeah. You've already described it in more detail than Microsoft has.
The NPU can read the models.
Inferencing
this. NPU is needed to understand and read and use the models.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So maybe the Azure component is just a part of the developer kit, not of all computers going forward.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's someday they want it to be, you're always cloud connected or some of the processing happens in the cloud.
I know I'm wrong, but I keep thinking that this is where Windows is headed.
It is. But you know what? It's far away. Like, remember 10X? 10X was going to virtualize all parts of the operating system. They couldn't pull it off.
They couldn't do it. Yeah.
And so that's their goal. I think that's still like their ideal. But instead, now they're trying different ways, like Windows 365 connected to Windows 11. Like, and some things happen in the cloud and some things happen locally.
Yeah.
They're trying that, I think, instead. Right.
Yeah. I think this whole, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, this notion of virtualization, containerization, that there's some future here for Windows, you know, where, like you said, maybe some of it's in the cloud, some of it's on some local machine. If Windows 10X had happened, there's your lightweight operating system that, you know, maybe they clearly have been thinking about. They showed it. We tested it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was a thing. This was not just like an idea someone had in a room somewhere. Like, they created something. It didn't come through.
Yeah.
So we get the UI in Windows 11 now, and there's, you know, there's some connection between Microsoft or Windows 365 and Windows 11 that's whatever. It's not the same thing. But
no.
Yeah, maybe we baby step our way to that thing that they've been trying to do for a long time.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe.
The thing is, if you roll something like this out at Build, they really ought to give us a more clear explanation of what
they're trying to build momentum, because they keep saying later this year, we're going to tell you everything else. Like, this is just showing you the thinking.
Yeah, but don't get us speculating, because inevitably 90% of speculation will be wrong.
It will.
And then we'll be disappointed when we don't get the thing that we thought we might be getting.
Yeah.
Look, we can't defend what they did other than to say Build is when it is. It's not from the very beginning, but for several years now, it's been this time of year.
Right. And they weren't ready.
They're under a lot of pressure with the M1 stuff, Apple Silicon, to respond in some way. And I think this is a way of saying, hey, look, we're responding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how Intel has its 12th gen with efficiency cores and Microsoft's. The industry really seems like taken aback by what Apple Silicon did. And
I don't think anyone
scrambling,
because Apple is the hyperbolic, whatever you say, company. And this time the reality matched the promise. And I think everyone was taken aback by that. It was just like, wait, what? They did it?
I actually have started with a little contrarian point of view, which is they got this big boost. they're going to have to manage expectations because with M2, M3, you're going to expect an equivalent boost. And I think you're really only going to see now.
You're going to see 2X, 3X going forward.
You're not
going to
see that at all. You're going to see 10%, 20%. Yeah. And I think that they have a little bit of an issue.
Yep.
And we'll see it.
We've seen how they did it, right? They had to double up the die.
Yeah.
They never had to do anything like that with the A-series chips, right? So A-series every year they could count on something like, oh, the ML this year is 50% or 50X faster.
A15 is only about 10% faster. Yeah. It depends on what you're talking about.
Down. It's matured. And
So they're going to have a little bit of an issue, I think, there. I mean, God knows they got a big jump here. Where they're still lacking is in GPU, and because they did this, they eliminated NVIDIA and AMD from the mix. Mm. So it's, you know, I think that all the good stuff from M1 has happened. And so it's interesting to watch the scramble.
Well, I can tell you, all the good stuff on Windows and ARM has yet to happen.
Right.
So,
right. Right.
We'll see. We'll
nowhere
see
to go but up, right?
People are scrambling. That's
for sure.
It's very interesting. All right. So, anyway, that's Project Volterra, the dev box. Yep. No price, no known availability, no known processor.
No.
Just this fall, you think?
Later this year.
Later this year. Yeah. December 31st, midnight.
Yeah.
In my gut, I have to think this thing is either literally that next-gen chip or they're counting on this data center, well, I guess we'll call it cloud rack thing, and you have one of these on your desk and it's just AI workloads. But when it becomes AI workloads, what are we talking about?
No, that's not like, for all developers by any means.
No, not
at all. I mean, this is very esoteric.
If Rich Turner says all developers, then there's got to be something.
Well, so the other part of this announcement we didn't really dwell on much is they're doing native versions of all their dev tools for ARM 64.
That's huge, including Visual Studio.
That is huge.
Yeah.
It's not just the developer tool. So it's Visual Studio, but also
WSL,
.NET,
right?
C++.
WSL, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if that is the case, which it is, they said that also coming later this year, then this could be a general purpose workstation if you say, okay, run these dev tools on this. If you don't care about AI, you could still benefit from running ARM 64 dev tools on this thing.
Yeah, but what are you doing on that thing? I mean, unless it's literally AI workloads or this thing that's specific to ARM,
right.
The majority, why if not 100% of your market is Intel or, x86.
Yeah.
Why on earth would you ever do that on an ARM box?
I know. Right.
You know?
Agree.
The one thing Mary Jo and I were talking about before we started recording was this notion that you're a developer and it's a checkbox in Visual Studio. You can create an application. We'll say it's using the Windows App SDK and WinUI3, a modern new app like no one ever really does, but let's pretend. And you can target x86 and x64, you can target ARM 64. Great. Mm. Now, if it's a big deal, unless it's some little silly utility, I mean, you're going to want to test that thing on hardware. And there really isn't a lot of hardware to test it on. You could get a Pro X, which is about $1,000, a Service Pro X, and maybe a handful. I know like an HP Elite Folio, for example, is probably over $1,000. It makes it a little prohibitive. There are no nice, inexpensive ARM tablets. So maybe this thing fills that gap. But it has to be more than that, right? You're buying a computer literally just to test your one app on this one platform. And you're like, it runs great. Okay, fine. But when you think about the reverse, if you were on ARM as a developer, which would be insane at this point in Windows, 99.something% of your customers are going to be running it on Intel. You have to run it on those machines. It would be silly not to just develop it on an Intel machine, or I keep saying Intel, but an x64 computer of any kind, AMD or Intel.
Right.
Today. Yep. Yeah, maybe that changes.
Maybe.
Well, they gave us a lot to talk about, so I'm glad. I'm glad for that. We'll have more build conversation coming up in just a little bit. But first, I want to talk about our sponsor for this segment of Windows Weekly, IT Pro TV. We love IT Pro TV. We talk about all the time how great it would be for you if you're interested in getting a job in IT, or if you're an IT professional, wants to keep your skills up, get new skills, recertify. But let's not forget, IT Pro TV is great for IT teams as well. They have a great Teams platform. Just like an individual, your IT team needs skills and knowledge. This time, though, it's to make sure your business continues successfully. With IT Pro TV, you're giving them something they will love, they will use, they will learn from. It's engaging. The IT Pro TV edutainers are professionals in the field, but their passion for IT is so great that it makes it engaging and fun, and you want to participate. They have fun while they're doing it. You will have fun while you're watching. In fact, 80% of users who start a video on IT Pro TV actually go all the way through. Partly that's also because they're short, 20 to 30 minutes. So you can watch them during a break, during a lunch hour. They're absolutely binge-worthy, but it's also content your team needs to stay on top of this field. It's evolving, changing all the time, and your team needs to be trained constantly. When a new software release comes out, a new system upgrade, there's a new cyber threat, you can count on IT Pro TV for up-to-date training on those particular areas within days, if not hours. That's partly because they have 7 studios running, making new content, updating the content. That content goes to the library, the learning library, within 24 hours. You can watch live, so you really get up to the minute. Or you can go to their 5,800 hours of on-demand content covering every vendor, every skill for your IT training. This is one place to go to get everything you need, all the training, all the certs. Microsoft, of course, Cisco, Linux, Apple, security, cloud, even soft skills, marketing, compliance, business skills as well. Your whole team will really want to take advantage of IT Pro TV. And you'll like the dashboard. You can really prove that IT Pro TV is working, that you're getting the return on your IT Pro TV investment. You'll be able to track team results, manage seats, assign and unassign team members, not just to a whole section, but to any individual video. You can jump right to the part of the video that you need. You'll get metrics like logins, viewing time, tracks completed, and more, so you'll know exactly how your team is using IT Pro TV. And the advanced reporting gives you real insight into viewing patterns and progress. It's a great way to, you know, see what's going on with your team, make sure they're doing it, and to justify the spend to the higher ups as well. I just think IT Pro TV is an incredible platform for individuals and for IT teams. Give your team the development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey. For teams from 2 to 1,000 members, volume discounts start as little as 5 seats. But, of course, you can also get 30% off when you use the offer code WW30. At itpro.tv/windows. 30% off. That's for individuals, WW30, but it's also for teams. Just say, whisper in the ear of your account executive, WW30. They'll get you at least 30% off on a business plan. itpro.tv/windows. The best way to learn, to get into IT, to learn about IT, to get those certs, to research, and to train your team. ITPro.tv. We love these guys. We thank them for supporting Windows Weekly and hope you'll support Windows Weekly by going to that address, itpro.tv/windows, and using that offer code WW30. Back to build. What are adaptive cards? What does that mean?
Oh, wait. We have to talk DevBox before we
I thought that was the DevBox.
That's a dev kit. What about the DevBox?
What's the DevBox?
Come on, Leo, pay attention.
I'm confused. I thought it was. What's that? What
they
is
are
that?
Both dev boxes, really.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. So what this dev box, this is the one I think you might like. This is running a developer workstation on Azure Virtual Desktop.
Oh, okay.
In the cloud.
So I could do it right? In a Chromebook or a Mac or whatever.
You mm-hmm. could. Yeah. Yes, you could.
Nice. Yep.
So the idea is Microsoft will set it up for you and have everything you need all ready in a VM in the cloud. And they haven't told us pricing, but you as a dev would just be able to automatically start working on your code in these different VMs that are hosted on Azure Virtual Desktop.
Neat.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Yeah. How much?
So the big, we don't know.
No one knows. No one knows.
That's all.
I like that you cut to the heart of the matter in each topic, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know. We really don't know. This is interesting because it's it will work for game developers, apparently, which is
wow.
I don't know why a game developer.
So you could do Xbox on it.
Or at least PC games, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Interesting. It's just a pre-configured VM. I guess the big deal here is it spins up pretty quick, and you can just plug in what you want. Also, it's manageable through Intune and Microsoft's other AAD-based.
So what do you think? What's the market for this?
Big businesses with lots of developers.
They don't want, and they don't want to set them up with their own hardware and just...
Well, they're going to be set up with their own hardware, but maybe they have to test it against, or they can, you know, whatever they're doing. Maybe they're rendering levels or something in some 3D game, and it's just faster to do this in the cloud because they can spin that hardware up really easily.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess it kind of democratizes software development in the sense that you could just be running it on an Ultrabook and hitting all your, you know, all the hardware's in the cloud. You could do it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Most, I mean, if you have a team, time is of the essence. You're going to give that team, at least I know this from our experience, you're going to give that team as much hardware as you can so that they can code and compile and do that fast.
This came up yesterday. I was thinking back to the origins of cloud computing and the big, you know, how do you sell people on this? They're like, all right, listen, you're like a retailer and you're busy for like 3 weeks in December.
Right.
The rest of the year, you're just on an demand. Even keel.
Right.
So in the past, you used to have to buy all this hardware and just keep it sitting there all the year long, consuming energy, doing nothing. Now you can fire it up as you need it. And you can actually apply that to so many different things. And if you think about software development, just to use my one stupid example, you're rendering levels for a game. You're not rendering those levels every single day.
Right.
So you don't have to buy that hardware and leave it sitting around. You can spin it up virtually when you need it.
Okay.
So, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm selling it.
Yeah, you are.
It's,
you're
doing a good job. It's my understanding. What I should say. Yeah. I think that's the idea.
I see. To me, the real virtue of Windows in the cloud is for like first line people and you know lesser users, not power users.
Lesser users.
Lesser.
Well, so that's one use, right? I mean, I think Microsoft is trying to expand.
Yeah.
Number of scenarios.
I think power users want power, but I guess if you can make the case that there is more power rendering in the cloud, then
that's their case, right? They're saying you could go buy the most expensive workstation to develop something really high end, or why not use cheaper hardware and develop it in the cloud?
Because a developer is making hundreds of dollars an hour, and you don't want to waste their time.
Yeah, I just want to use an iPad Pro. Could I just have my thing in the cloud, and who cares?
I guess. Yeah. Okay.
Chromebook. Maybe. Chromebook.
No dev wants to use a Chromebook. And you don't want your devs using Chromebooks.
I know. I'm being facetious,
You want to give them, you know, giant.
A Chromebook, you can do Visual Studio Code. It runs Linux. I mean.
Yeah.
You could. There are certain.
It depends what you're running. You know, what it's all going to depend on is pricing, because Azure Virtual Desktop by itself is not cheap, right? It's very expensive. So,
maybe.
See how much it's cost.
Maybe the idea is hybrid work, because you've got developers all over the place.
That's right.
Yeah.
So and maybe going back and forth between an office and home, maybe.
Yeah. And that's the advantage is that they can collaborate and work together in your cloud. Wherever they are, and they have the same setup everywhere they go, and maybe that's maybe this is about hybrid. Do they talk a lot about hybrid during the conference?
I think the word hybrid came up 1.1 million times yesterday.
Exactly,
that's what I thought.
So, they did. They did mention hybrid.
Everything was hybrid.
Because that's
hybrid
the new
compute,
challenge.
Hybrid work.
That's the new challenge. You know,
it is.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's kind of unexpected, and I think it's here for the long run. So
I think so too.
It's reasonable to kind of. Approach it. All right. Can we talk?
Cute little work from home phase. We'll call that the puberty of the situation.
Exactly.
And now we're just on hybrid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Can we talk about adaptive cards now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're going to like this one, Leo, because it's JSON.
Ooh. So, you know, JSON and I go way back.
JSON and Burn, baby. So. For people in the Windows space, you'll know that there have been many initiatives to bring little web-based UI elements to Windows, right? So there was Active Desktop back in the late 1990s. We had the sidebar in Windows Vista and briefly in XP as well. In Windows 7, they got rid of the sidebar, but they kept those things, which I think were called gadgets, not widgets, if I remember correctly, but they would be on the desktop, you know. And now there is this new technology called adaptive cards, which is how widgets in Windows 11 are built. And interestingly, it's going to be, I don't know if it's the way, but a way, right, that loop components will be built. Do you know if that's the only way or is it a way?
I don't know. That came out of nowhere. Yeah. Like Microsoft didn't talk a lot about loop at this event, but then they're like, oh, but by the way, you can build apps, your own loops using adaptive cards. I'm like, wait, where did this come from?
Like, oh, you're like, wait, what? So that's, it's interesting to me that those two things are the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, Apple guys will remember the, I guess they called them widgets that they had in Mac OS X back and they go to a screen and they had those little web-based widget things, right? I think they were called widgets. That's what these are. I mean, that's not what they are, but this is kind of the modern version of that. They obviously with JSON, you are connecting to backend services. So you might have, you know, simple things like weather data or money conversion or whatever it is, you know, but I was kind of fascinated to find out that widgets, which I can't stand, and loop components, which I'm very interested in, are apparently both going to be built using the same underlying technology.
Yeah. Yep.
And so there it is. And I guess this stuff is compatible with every platform on Earth. There's an adaptive cards website, and you can build these things. And they run on Android and iOS and Chromebook, and they run on the web, and they run on Mac and Windows and Linux, and they're just totally cross-platform. I never heard this term before in my life until a few days ago.
I think you have to build something now with adaptive cards, Paul.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we can do what Frank suggested, which was create a Paul Thrott bot.
Yes, was that you what could. He said? Yep.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, just to deliver the news slightly sarcastically. I don't know.
Should we just keep running through build?
Sure.
This will be cool.
Intelligent
quick.
Data platform is all you.
It's
we'll
all
just
me.
Put it that way.
Yeah. So there were quite a few announcements about databases, analytics, governance at Build. And the way they pulled all these things together was they said, by the way, we're creating yet another new Microsoft platform. It's called the Intelligent Data Platform. And I was like, oh man, my eyes started glazing over. I'm like, ooh. Here we go, another platform, right? But this is kind of interesting because it encompasses everything that comes from the data group at Microsoft, right? So anything that's like SQL Server, Azure SQL, Azure Synapse Analytics,
right.
Not the graph. No.
Oh, not the graph.
Not the graph. Okay, nope.
Not
everything
the graph.
But the graph.
Everything but the graph. Cosmos DB.
Oh, this is literal data. Oh, you're talking literal like endpoint.
Like database. Data. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And if you think about it, Satya always talks about data estates, you know, how data is the new oil, all those metaphors we have for how developers need to be thinking about adding data, adding the ability to analyze things quickly using analytics products right into your app. And the missing piece was the governance piece. So, you know, Microsoft just rebranded all their compliance and governance products as Purview a couple months ago. So now in this platform, you've got the databases, you've got the analytics products, including Power BI, and you've got the governance. So that if you are developing an application that uses any of these things, you'll be able to make sure you are building something that will be compliant and will make your chief data officers very happy. So, yeah. that's data platform, Microsoft Intelligent Data Platform in a nutshell. How's that?
Sorry, I fell asleep. What?
Leo just this like time. Walked
data's
off tough. And disappeared.
Data.
I know. It's important, but it's not the most exciting thing in the world.
It is important. It is. Yeah. Let's not forget. It is.
It's really not. It's really not something you can just gloss over, although we just did.
Let's gloss over it. Yeah. Let's please over it. Let's gloss it.
I beg to differ. I think we can gloss over it. So there were a bunch of Power Platform announcements at the show, which
this
I think is great.
That no-code, low-code thingamajigger. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch to this. And they pulled something called Power Pages out of Power Apps. And this, I think it used to be called Power Apps Portal or portals, I guess.
Are people using this stuff?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Power Platform they are, but Power Apps Portals, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, this is kind of new. This is like for designing business websites. But a lot of what they're doing here is like AI-based. So they're taking these capabilities and they're adding capabilities to the Power Platform where you can say, hey, I have this drawing of something that I think would make a nice app. You know, and it will actually
that was
turn
a weird example that they gave. Yeah, you draw it on a napkin and you get and they go, okay, good, we'll turn that into an app.
No, you please understand, you didn't just build an app, right? What you built was an app UI.
Front end. You made a front end.
Right. But the point of this, like the point of Power, in this case, Power Apps, I guess, is you've constructed a UI. Like if you're a developer, like if you're doing like a .NET app, like the apps I've created, like a lot of what you're doing is connecting UI and then events that can occur with that UI to some block of code. So someone clicks a button and something happens. Someone clicks a menu, something happens. Someone clicks in a text box, something happens, you know, that kind of thing. And a Power Automate, or I should say Power Apps rather, kind of works the same way. I mean, it's just that you have this visual thing and you're like, well, what do you want to put here? And you connect it to a backend data source or whatever.
This is Visual Basic.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's what Visual Basic. You would draw the components.
Yep.
And then you'd say, okay, and when you push that button, that does this, and you'd write some code.
Honestly, that was always super powerful, right? I mean, I kind of compare this to what they had done with PowerShell back in the day, which is still around, right? So PowerShell is a command line environment that is designed for automation. You can, instead of adding one new user or something to a domain,
PowerShell's huge. 100 users. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But PowerShell is. I remember this is 20 years ago now, but I remember being confronted with PowerShell back when it was still called Monad, right back before it was out, and thinking, you know, it was .NET based, which as a developer I kind of thought was cool, but I was like, I don't know how admins are going to respond to this, right? Because this isn't really in their wheelhouse, at least some of them. And you know, I think it's a learning curve, and I think with this, what they're trying to do is bring a similar automation capability, but to end users, like just average users. And I think for a lot of those people, that's scary and it seems impossible and how I can't program, how am I going to do this? And I think the visual stuff helps get them over that hump, right? I think that's kind of the point. So, you know, Power Automate is built into Windows now. It's part of Windows as sort of an end user automation tool. Like I got an email from someone important, do this thing or whatever. You know, Power Apps, Power Pages now, Power Virtual Agent, which is, I mean, I'm interested in it. This is the thing actually that Frank was talking about. You know, you can create like a bot. Kind of like you're creating an infocom game, right? You're basically plotting out possible things that people can say and what your response will be to those things, you know, that type of thing.
Programmers always hate, I mean, I'll speak for myself. As a programmer, I always hate these things because, so I think what Microsoft's goal is, and they've done it in the past. They did it with BASIC. That was how they started. They did it with VB. The idea, they even do it with Excel, is to take for normal people who have some repetitive tasks to somehow make it a little easier for them to get done.
Yeah.
Programmers hate it because it's a different paradigm, and it's like, that's confusing to me. You know, I don't.
Well, the citizen other developers.
Citizen developers. I like that. That's good.
But an average user is going to get in over their head and say, I just can't.
Oh, yeah. Quickly, you're going to need a developer. Yeah.
And then you're going to have to hand it to a developer.
And the developer's going to go, God, what is this?
What are you doing?
Exactly.
The square peg doesn't go in the circular hole. Yep. What are you doing?
Yeah. The developer, basically, it's a spec, and now you start from scratch, I think.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Anyway, but the point of, I think a lot of the advances they announced was using AI to get over that last bit.
Right. No, it's this has been the holy grail forever.
Yeah.
There's a Copilot feature in GitHub, Leo. Have you seen this?
Yeah, actually, that is so weird.
Complete, like write code
for
you?
It is so. It's very problematic for a variety of reasons.
It went generally available. It's going to be generally available very soon.
Yeah.
Crazy. People are interested in it. They're intrigued. They're afraid and intrigued, both.
Well, a lot of people in the open source community are saying, it's just stealing code from our public GitHub pages. They better not steal code from my public GitHub page. They'll be very sorry.
Well, I was going to say, they're welcome to mine, but that's not the decision I would make. You know, I mean, you take it if you want it.
Yeah, go ahead, have it.
Yeah.
it's an interesting idea. I mean, really, what it is they noticed that every developer cuts and pastes from us from Stack Exchange, and so might as well just automate the process.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Really, when I was a kid, I used to sit there with like a Run magazine and type it in codes.
Me too. Yeah.
Just type in. It wasn't even software code; it was just codes, and it would
magically turn into something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just hex, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was hex, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say you'd want to discourage that behavior, to be honest with you. But probably better to write code you understand what it's doing.
It's called AI pair programming, so it's all okay, right?
Yeah, and it's been the holy grail forever, right? We've always talked about computers writing their own code.
Yeah.
And
helping
you
out. Not replacing you.
If you could develop an AI that could write itself, then it would it could iterate faster than a human. And it's pretty soon you'd have artificial. Yeah. You'd have Skynet. There you go.
You'd have Skynet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you, Microsoft, for pushing us one step.
It's not
closer.
Like those movies are dystopian. That would be fun.
Great.
Paul's little head on the the Notion has moved ahead. Past you.
So
skip past.
So I see that too. That's not me.
Oh. Well, who's
before there were two little faces in there, and I don't know.
So there's we got a little,
a little M.
Little M. So now I know that Mary Jo wants to do this.
Wait, you just made it disappear. It's gone. Oh, there it is.
But your head was on Net Maui, Paul, and I thought, he's trying to skip the Teams section.
No, we should mention the Teams quickly.
Just move it right down to Xbox.
The Teams one is kind of interesting, too, I thought.
All right.
Follow
let's talk.
The bouncing head, Leo.
I know. That's what I was doing. Does he want me to skip Teams?
How it's like giving you a cue. Like, where are we?
I don't know what
I'm going to the beer pick. I'm going down to the beer pick.
I have to say, I hope Loop is as good as Notion, but I'm loving Notion. I just think it's so fun.
So
I like Notion, too, but the offline thing.
You know? Yeah, well, maybe Loop will have some offline capabilities.
Well, okay, I'll tell you something about the Loop app, which both Paul and I thought would debut probably at Build.
Right.
It's not ready yet.
It's okay. Make it good.
Yeah, they're like, it's coming later. Like, this isn't where we're going to show that off. And like we said, the Loop components, they talked very limitedly about that too, right? Like just said, okay, you can use adaptive cards. The other piece of the Loop related stuff that was having to do with Teams was this new feature they're introducing to Teams called Live Share in Teams. So there's already something called Live Share in Visual Studio. This is not the same thing, even though they're both called Live Share, right?
Okay.
Because it's Microsoft. Yeah. This Live Share in Teams is based on Fluid Framework. Fluid Framework is the stuff that underlies Loop, right? So if you think about it, you're in a Teams meeting, you're collaborating on something together, say a document, a diagram. You really can't actually, like, you can both like look at it together, but you couldn't really work on it together.
Well, all you can do is
Teams.
You can share your screen is what you can do.
Right.
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 So someone would bring up the application and everyone else would watch.
Right.
So
which isn't the same.
It's a form of collaboration, but it's not.
Yeah. Not really though. Right. So this Teams Live Share is going to let you actually more naturally collaborate together inside of a meeting or inside of an app and do things in conjunction.
Yeah. So you actually have an app, like a third party app. Yeah. I don't remember the example they used, but it wasn't a Microsoft app, but
no, it was the thing that this picture is here. Yeah. There's a picture on my post that I forget who the vendor is who did this, but they're showing like people working together on a design of like some kind of a, I don't know what that thing is.
That's a jet engine.
Engine.
But those are all, those colored things are all people, the different people, and they can each work on different parts
it's
of it.
It's like blind men and the elephant. They all have a different view.
Right. Yep.
Right. What do you mean the turbine's in front? It's in back.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
I guess.
It's like
is this really how you want to work?
You know, it's funny.
I asked the same question, and the answer is no. But this is the hybrid world thing, right? This is the point.
This is how you are working. You may not want it, but this is how you're going.
We said this on the feed yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, already Teams is a collaboration environment. How can you make it even more collaborative? This is how you do it. You add something like this Live Share thing. Right?
Well, here's how you can make it more collaborative. Go to the same room.
Yeah.
You know,
you're talking crazy here, man.
No, it makes it really though. What you're really on is a conference call, and you, as in any conference call, you share a screen. In this case, you share an image, and then people can noodle on it all individually.
But you're all in teams, and you're working on it in your teams, and they're working on it in their teams, and it's informing the same thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you probably can't do more than point at, annotate. Right. I mean, you're not.
I don't know. It looked like, I don't know. I mean,
it's that collaborate.
Yeah, but look at the co-annotate. Tools. You got a pencil.
Yeah. No, I bet it's like whiteboard, right?
Well, this
I mean,
is a whiteboard. Very specific app. I mean, whatever this is, but
okay.
No, like whiteboard.
Think about something simple, like a document.
Yeah.
Right.
And very notice, like, by the way, working. You still have to request control, so it's still one at a time.
Yeah.
Okay. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
I mean, you know when you're in a meeting and everyone's talking over you like on Windows Weekly, you know, that works sometimes.
What?
This is trying to prevent that by letting people go in turn.
Should we?
I don't know that the control is what you think it is. I think that might be the primary view that everyone sees who's not working on it. I do believe this is real-time collaboration. Like, I think people can work on it at the same time. That's what they showed.
Yeah, they did show that. They did. I think it's like whiteboard, right? You know when they showed Notion, the Notion app, the whiteboard app, they show people like interacting simultaneously together on a single document or a single diagram, right?
Yeah, and by the way, framework. We've done like 12 of these shows now. We have never had a single issue.
I know,
collaborating on one of these things ever, not once.
We have not.
we have this M thing popping up. I don't know what the heck that is. But other than that, I mean, it's haunted. But you know what? It's getting the job done.
No, it works great.
We it might need great. To have an exorcist step in to fix this.
By the way, that's the reason that you have to do it in the cloud, Paul. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're going to have incompatible merges, and you're going to have somebody's going to win. Yeah. Somebody's gonna lose.
Every week, Leo, that's what we had.
Incompatible merges.
Conflicts. I want something that resolves conflicts.
That's because,
but that's
because OneNote was offline, right? You could work on it offline and then, or no.
No, we were working online and still it was still screwed up.
Yeah, it's terrible. Well, I'm glad Notion's working. Look, at least Loop will have to work as well as Notion.
I think so.
Right?
I hope so. Yeah. I'm counting on it.
Yeah.
Let's hope.
Yep. Let's talk Maui.
Yeah. So as long promised and expected, .NET Maui, which is the multi-platform app user interface, the Xamarin Forms, basically, is generally available. Oddly, it still requires a preview version of Visual Studio. I think sometime later in this year, that's going to change. So you have to run that kind of side by side with the normal version. I don't know that there was a lot of news there beyond that being the case. So that was expected. Yeah. No surprise there. Back in February, March or something, Microsoft started talking about the Windows App SDK 1.1. This is the former Project Reunion. I was in a session yesterday, and I actually asked about this because I thought it was going to ship this week. And it's supposed to ship today, which is why it's in the notes. To the start of the show, I hadn't seen it. So anytime now, 1.1 should be out. What does that entail? I honestly have no idea. So... there are new features coming, new capabilities, et cetera, but they haven't announced it. So,
will you start doing some stuff with it?
Yeah. I was actually, when was this? I was just playing with it. Yeah, I think, so one of the things, one of the things they did show off is, taking UWP technologies, decoupling them from a specific version of Windows 10 or now 11. Making them broadly available to any supported version of Windows. And then adding all those new WinUI 3 capabilities, which is the stuff that makes Windows 11 look like Windows 11, right? So, and the thing you create is a desktop app. It's not a mobile app. Okay, cool. And I like this idea, but man, it's hard to get started. So one of the things they did show off was you can download an extension, I don't know what to call it, it's an extension or an add-in, and it actually provides you with templates to start with. So if you're going to create an app that has like a toolbar, a navigation bar, it's going to have a settings interface. You can actually just kind of check through it and say, yeah, I want all these things. And it will actually build the app skeleton for you. And you get like a basic toolbar. A lot of modern apps have this kind of nav bar concept. And then the settings pane that slides in. So like when I did my UWP stuff, which is probably now a couple of years ago, year and a half ago, whatever it was, you had to build all that stuff yourself. And I did. I did that all manually. Actually, I have to say, having that stuff built for you is really nice. And I think we'll go a long way to helping people, you know, get started. So, yeah, I was just looking at it with the eye of an eye towards maybe doing a I think of it as reunion, a Windows app SDK version of that Notepad app. Just to kind of see what that looks like. So I probably will be doing that.
Nice.
Summer,
yeah. Yeah, fun. Yeah. Then you can give us a, you know, from the front lines report.
Yeah, it's not going to be positive. but yeah, it's
okay. We'll see. Going with
it gives you auto. It does auto stuff like auto themes, like dark and light themes, automatic. That's part of that settings thing. Actually, that's really nice. Honestly, I found that stuff to be really tedious in UWP. So.
Good. Yeah. So anything that makes your life better is good by me.
Yep. Yep.
They did talk about Windows Store, which I guess that's developers care about that. That's where they're going to distribute ultimately everybody, right?
It was actually a lot of this stuff. So I guess we should talk about the Android stuff as in here, right? There was, or should we? Yeah, that we should.
Oh, well, so you have it later, I think, but yeah.
Well, that's the subsystem part. So as far as like the announcements from Build, I just want to throw out this notion that Microsoft, this is out in a public, it's not a press release, I guess it's a blog post. It says, Amazon has released thousands of apps to the Microsoft Store. No, they haven't. That is not true. Amazon has not released hundreds of apps. They have released dozens of apps.
Wow.
And 95% of them are crap. Oh, like they're just games, like terrible.
And those are the only things you can get is stuff that Amazon has released. Yeah.
Right.
So there's, I mean, look, there's 12 to 15 good apps like United, Audible, Kindle, Washington Post, stuff like that. Like apps you would recognize as being from actual mainstream big developers that you might want. So supposedly that's going to change. The store is coming, I should say, the Amazon App Store for Android is coming to 5 more countries, I believe it is, by the end of the year. But that's not happening now. Like, that didn't just happen. But if you live in France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the United Kingdom, that will happen toward the end of the year. And I guess implicit to this, because they said thousands, like, there have to be more apps at some point. I've gotten a lot of questions about this lately. People like, what's going on? Are they ever going to add any apps? It's like, it's... The thing to remember, it is still a preview, so it's not generally available per se. I mean, you can get it in the store. You have to kind of go look for it, but you can get it if you want, even on like the shipping version of Windows 11. It doesn't require like the dev channel or anything like that, but it's a little, I don't know. that's been
weak,
kind of disappointing. Yeah. So in more pertinent news, I guess, for the store, there's been a wait list up till now for people of Win32 apps. And that, I shouldn't even say Win32, like desktop apps. So it's Win32, it's .NET apps, it's Windows Presentation Foundation apps, WinForms apps, React Native apps, PWAs, you know, et cetera. Anything that's not a what we used to call a Microsoft Store or a Windows Store app, that stuff is wide open. So if you have an app and you want to get it into the store, you can just go through the normal process. It could be up potentially within hours, certainly within days. So that's happening. They're going to have an ad platform for Microsoft Store apps, I guess. And that's interesting because they're doing what Apple and Google won't, which is you can bring your own payment systems. You can do your own ads. You can do whatever you want. But if you want to use our stuff, it's there, you know, and okay, that's cool. And that's probably most of it, right? I mean, it's I think that's most of it. Yeah. So it's just maturing this thing that's honestly 10 years that thing has been around. Can you believe it's been 10 years? It's been 10 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Are they eventually, do they want all developers to put their apps in the store? Is that,
well,
it's not
sure
a reasonable goal. No. Yeah.
We saw this with the Mac App Store as well. Yeah. You know, these app stores work really well on mobile. They're walled gardens. That's your only choice, basically.
No, the Mac App Store on desktop, huge, huge success. Exactly what
really?
You want. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's not a lot of crap same... when you download it and install it.
A lot of crap. No, then it's nothing like the
there's very little crap. And when you install it, if you have a family, they all get it.
That's the benefit. Yep.
It updates automatically, and most apps are in there now. By far. And because of Apple's security stuff, Gatekeeper, most users have it set, you kind of like Windows S, where that's the only place you can get apps. That's kind
I
of
would
like
just say, I prefer to have stuff in the store. So I know there are technical people out there who don't see the need for this. They would just, I can just download my apps from the web, blah, 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 whatever. You know what? It is the licensing that makes the Microsoft Store now make sense to me. So if I buy something like Adobe Photoshop Elements, or if I buy something like Affinity Photo, or whatever it is, this thing just, I can just install it everywhere. I don't have to worry about typing in codes and deactivating and reactivating.
Look what's on the front page, you know, of Apple's Macintosh App Store, accessibility in Microsoft 365.
Yeah.
You know, this is, I guess they're doing a lot of accessibility stuff. But this is, honestly, this is fantastic.
So here's the fundamental difference between the two stores is that when Apple started their store, they didn't have a new app model, right? They were just...
These were just Mac apps.
You can submit your desktop apps.
Yep.
We'll look at them. We'll think about it. We'll say yes or no.
That's smart, though, is these apps are more secure. They did prohibit what you could do in many degrees. And a lot of developers famously said, well, I can't put my app in the App Store because I need to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But it also means that stuff that's in the App Store is really secure.
And
you can see they've done a great job of highlighting stuff, as always with Apple. You know, if you get on the front page here, you're gonna get a lot of downloads.
You're in good shape,
I think this is a good model for what Microsoft should be doing.
Yeah. All right. I think this is what they're trying to do. So I will say the Microsoft Store, as we call it now, has improved a lot. It supports different app types. You know, PWAs, I think, were one of the early ones. There's been, you could wrap desktop apps in some sort of a container thing. Remember, they had this process for going through that. And there are weird things like the Firefox is a good example, where if you get Firefox from the store, it's not 100% like the one on the web because there's some limitation.
That's been a problem in the Mac App Store as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think as of today, I guess we'll call it, I think it's kind of wide open now. So if you want to be in the store and you didn't want to do all that container, blah, 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 whatever stuff, I mean, I think you can pretty much get your stuff in the store. You might get a note from Microsoft similar to what you just described from Apple, where they say, hey, you can't do this thing or whatever it might be, and you have to make those
changes. The developers sometimes will send you to their website saying, you know, if you want the full version. But that's, you know, for instance, Rich Siegel, who does BB Edit for years, kept his app off the App Store.
Right, right.
And just recently has re-added it to the App Store because he now feels like he can do everything he wants to do in it. So
Is an app that has like an extensibility model. And
all sorts of stuff.
You can kind of imagine this might not have been allowed back on day one or whatever.
Yeah. He used to have a kind of simplified version that you could get on the App Store and then a version for the website. And
recently
he said, you know what? I'm going to keep it in the apps. I'm going to put it all in the App Store. So they've changed what he can do.
Well, that's good. I know there's a knee-jerk reaction to this stuff, and I think a lot of people listening is just like, I don't want anything to do with that. But honestly, for apps that you pay for, like the ones I mentioned and probably others, I if there is a version in the store, I will always get that.
Yes, and I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
By the way, here's another thing that they can do. Great iPhone and iPad apps for Macs with M1.
Yeah, so that's the way this store has evolved, right? They have those Catalyst apps, right?
Right. They're
called, and you can run iPad apps.
You don't need Catalyst anymore because the M1 is the same chip.
It's the same. Yeah, okay.
So
but that's great because these things are known to work
Apple's
well in a Mac.
Strategy
well
is very interesting. Yeah, if you want to see all the stuff from the iPhone and iPad, you can run on the Mac. It's much better than the Kindle store list, I got to say.
Which is terrible, yeah. So, well, in the early days when this was Windows 8, I mean, the only apps in there were the we used to call Metro apps or modern apps or whatever. And, you know, it was garbage.
Yeah.
And the nice thing on Apple's side is, you know, you bring like the iPhone and iPad apps to the Mac. It's like, oh my God, it's like this incredible collection of apps. Like
that's
on
right.
Windows 8, it was like, okay, how many farting apps?
Yeah,
do you have
exactly.
Here?
Exactly.
You know, it's just like, it was really bad.
I do have to say though, if you search for that, you will find a couple.
Sure.
Three.
But guys, these have been highly curated. They're known to be very realistic sounding.
There's Burp and Fart Piano. There's Modaction, which is just funny sounds, a soundboard. And then this is odd that this $30 app, Button Shortcuts, is under farts. But there you go. And there's a lot more.
AI at work.
Yeah, Plumber Check. That's good. Whoopee Cushion. Yeah, there's... little bit more on the iPhone. But this is these are iPhone. You know, if you've been waiting for Butts in Space, you can now play it on the Mac, right? Yeah. So
play is your favorite butt.
Play is your favorite butt. That's their slogan. You must know it. So as you see, there is quite a few more iPhone fart apps than there are.
They were all
desktop.
Ported from Windows Phone when that platform went under.
Exactly.
Well, apparently Apple does not have any strictures against restrictions on that particular one. As we call them,
guys who, like,
flatulence apps.
Yes. Nice. You're like the app approval guy. It's Sunday night at 3:00 in the morning, and you're wondering why on earth this is how your life has turned out.
Yeah.
You have to go through the flatulent apps and just make sure they reach a certain quality.
Knox
bar.
Harrington is telling me Apple actually sent out a memo to developers saying we have enough flashlight and fart apps. You can stop now.
Yep. I remember that. No, that went public at the time. Yeah, because everyone came up. It's like, look, you can use your screen as a flashlight. Please stop.
Stop. It's enough. One is enough, really? Technically?
You have created an app that displays the color white. Congratulations. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times, though, I kind of re-download the Bic Lighter app. Because every time I go to a concert, I forgot my lighter. And so now I can do it on my phone. People do that, by the way. That is the thing to do now. Is hold up your phone.
And my kids will never understand that they used to be actual lighters.
Cigarette lighters? Why did everybody have lighters? Yeah. What was that all about, Dad?
Well, Dad.
We were killing ourselves in different ways back then.
That's right. Yes. We had different ways of doing it. That's right.
Yep.
Continuing on, the promised new, I hate to even say this word, and you've put it in Notion, and I thought maybe it would cross it out.
Great exception to the word new here, but please continue.
The new OneNote app starts.
It can be very fast, a fast.
To take shape.
Oh, it's going to be slow because I'm going to dump all over it. But please.
You're OneNote refugees.
Wait, was it last year that they said they were going to combine the UWP and the existing OneNote app? Right. So this is the start of that. But what was kind of interesting to me is there are actually some new features. I don't even know how many of these are in the new bits that are coming out yet or if they're just promises. But there were things like, I forget what you call this, undoing your inking. So if you create a diagram, you can go backwards and see what you did and how you got to the point.
That's cool.
That actually is cool. Okay. Yeah. There's more voice annotations, so you can dictate to the app and have it do things. There's going to be some new transcription things coming. But you know what there's not in this list?
What?
The thing that Paul and I have complained about, OneNote, which is co-authoring doesn't work. And there's nothing about that in here. I'm like, wait, I thought that would be the one thing they would kind of fix.
They fixed all the things you don't care about.
Exactly.
My issue with this app is that it is what they did to like the Paint app in Windows 11, which is it's the same app. They just put a WinUI front end on
rounded corners.
It's a little prettier. You know, it's rounded corners. Yeah. It's the same app. And
smaller
I don't want
toolbar,
the same app.
See, right?
Yeah, but it's just visual. This is the lipstick on a pig thing.
Yeah.
And I don't, this is not what the world needs. You know, we need something better. We need
love, sweet love. Oh, no, that's something else.
We just want a co-authoring,
like to buy the world a
guys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is.
We wanted co-authoring, and all we got was the lousy ribbon.
It's like we wanted co-authoring, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt would be the perfect
T-shirt.
Although this isn't all the features, they say. It's just the start of the features. So maybe somebody listening will help us out with
this.
Here's
an idea, guys, less features. I just want to take notes. Yeah. You know, like what?
They need OneNote Lite. They need a family. Yes. Notepad, the simplest. OneNote Lite.
Oh, that's a great idea. Brilliant.
Right? They need a whole little family.
That's a brilliant idea.
They'll never do it.
No.
Well, they talked to me about this a few years ago, probably several years ago now. There was some discussion about this. They saw that there this was. Kind of markdown-based world was taking over, and they know that OneNote had grown into this giant pig of a program.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like anything else. It's like Outlook is like this. Any Word is like this. I mean, any big application that's been around for a long time. Anytime you start talking about taking stuff away, people start complaining because there's always that one guy who needs that one feature that no one else uses. And that's a nice segue to Windows 11 because that's the problem with Windows 11, right? Because the complaints about Windows 11 are always from the person who's like, what's going on? I need this one thing and it's gone. They're like, I am the one human being that puts the taskbar on the left side of the screen. I can't do that in Windows 11. And you can't simplify something without taking stuff away. It's right. Just the reality.
That's fine. I don't, you know, that's fine.
It's fine, but I left because they're not going to do it to OneNote. So no. I'm just right. done. I'm not. I couldn't care less what they do now. Yeah. I'm never looking at that thing again.
It's so, really interesting. Sorry. I mean, you made us use OneNote for years, Paul.
Wow. Okay.
We've been using Notion. I've been using Notion for 4 or 5 years.
Fastest. Yeah. Dictatorship. You made us.
I made you. You made us use OneNote. But there's nothing, you know, more virulent than a lapsed OneNote user, shall we say.
Yeah.
There you go.
There's no hate. No more great.
Like the hate of a former OneNote,
OneNote user.
Yep.
We're going to take a break. I do want to mention, remember I ordered a Dell XPS 15 because I wanted a 12th generation. Mm-hmm. It's built. Build is complete, but...
Oh, no.
Thank you for your order. The current lockdown in China is restricting logistics and delaying order deliveries. So they've built it. They've got it in a factory in China, some probably Quanta, right? The tracking number for your order will not become active until the system arrives in your country. This may take up to 30 days. Please check back here for the most update information on your tracking.
Speaking of virulent, the Chinese person that built this put a moth in there, and it's probably going to destroy the Western seaboard.
I'll have to wear a mask when I open the the laptop. So,
when did they originally tell you to expect
This is the good news, is they correctly estimate. Well, we'll find out when I get it. But they correctly, I think, estimated June 11th, and this is still the estimated arrival date. So I ordered it in late April. So, yeah. I mean, that's not awful, but it's interesting.
You were hoping you'd have it before July for the trip.
And I probably will. I think I will. Mm-hmm. I will be taking it.
I'm awfully positive about this. I would be spiraling right now. but that's how I handle things.
So this was about, this was 3 or 4 days ago. I got this note that, hey, we built it. Yeah. But
was the headline just China?
China. Here, Leo. So yeah, I mean, I'm presuming they build it, you know, in Shanghai, where they're completely locked down. And, I guess it's just a pallet of, laptops just sitting by the door.
Just get a bunch of bat wings in there and it'll be like,
put a few monkeys in there for fun.
Yeah. Remember all those sanctions? It had nothing to do with
it. I don't know. Anyway, I don't mind. It's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. I knew it was going to take a while. Like, as you said, I just hope it comes before we set sail for Sitka, July 16th through the 23rd. I think there's still slots. It's not too late. Although I'm guessing that people are probably going to wait and see what happens with COVID before they sign up. But you'll get, I'm pretty sure you get your money back if they cancel the cruise. So.
If you guys, if you've seen Gilligan's Island, I think you have a rough idea of how this is going to go.
What, you're going to hit me with your hat all the time? Is that?
Well, you're going to, I was thinking,
who's
you're
the skipper
be the
here? Right. Who's Gilligan?
Gilligan.
Anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. Cruise.twit.tv. And you know, when you fill out the form there, you talk to a travel agent at a travel store and you can ask them, you know, what happens if COVID breaks out or something. But I think, you know, they reduce the number of people on the boat. They have a good code of COVID protocols and stuff. I think it's going to be fine.
There's nothing safer than being at sea when it comes to stuff like this.
Well, unless people on the boat have it, in which case there's no worse place to be.
There are no stories about people being on a cruise ship having problems with COVID. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, Lord. Why did we think? You know, when we planned this, a year ago,
I know,
we thought, oh, it'll be over by then. Everything should be fine by then. Sure. No, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Paul and Stephanie, Lisa and I, and a bunch of rabid Windows dozers.
Dozers at Sea.
Dozers at Sea. That's the name of it. And
National
I put together
Lampoon Presents.
A little kit so that we can we can do some little podcasts or social media or something while we're there. So it'll be a lot of fun. Our show today brought to you by Tanium. There's a name Mary Jo knows. One of the big disruptors, one of the little guys who is really changing the industry's approach to cybersecurity. Because early on, Tanium realized there is a fundamental flaw. IT management security point tools offer only a small piece of the solution to protect your environment. Many of them say, oh, we could stop all breaches. They can't. Making decisions based on stale data, trying to defend your critical assets from cyber attacks with tools that don't talk to each other, that's no way for IT teams to navigate today's attack surface. You got to break down the silos. That's Tanium's approach. It's a completely novel and I think very important step forward in security. Tanium says it's time for a convergence of tools, endpoints, and IT ops and security. They have solutions for government entities, education, financial services, retail, healthcare. These are all hotspots right now, right, for security, especially important. You could trust Tanium's solutions for every workflow that relies on endpoint data. They have asset discovery and inventory, which will let you track down every IT asset you own instantaneously. Sure, you might have a tool that does just that, but Tanium does so much more, and there's no silos, so it knows everything. So you got risk, and this is important, compliance management. You could find and fix vulnerabilities at scale in seconds. Threat hunting, hunt for sophisticated adversaries in real time. Client management, which lets you automate operations from discovery to management. Sensitive data monitoring, which lets you index and monitor sensitive data globally in seconds. Tanium is one of those companies, one of those startups that has transformed the security landscape. And they're very popular with organizations where other endpoint management and security providers have failed. Maybe that's you, or maybe that's could be you, and you don't want that to happen. With a single platform, Tanium identifies where all your data is across your entire IT estate, patches every device you own automatically in seconds, implements critical security controls, and it's all from a single pane of glass. Look at some of the testimonials at Tanium.com, including Kevin Bush. He's VP IT Ring Power Corp. He says, quote, Tanium brings visibility to one screen for our whole team. If you don't have that kind of visibility, you're not going to be able to sleep at night. With real-time data comes real-time impact. So if you're ready to unite operations and security teams with a single source of truth and confidently protect your organization from cyber threats, well, maybe it's time you met Tanium. T-A-N-I-U-M, Tanium.com/twit. That's Tanium.com/twit. And we thank them so much for supporting Windows Weekly. It's really great because a lot of these really exciting new companies are now kind of getting that this is a great place for them to be to introduce themselves to our audience. So thank you, Tanium, and thank you, Windows Weekly listeners, dozers, for going to Tanium.com/twit so they know you saw it here. On we go with the show. Let me go back to our Notion and see what we're talking. Next, Windows 11.
Any other week, this would have been a top story.
Really?
Yep.
Yep.
Should I play a fanfare?
Yeah. So the second version of Windows 11, 22H2, is complete.
Oh. Well, that is a big story.
And, yeah, they didn't announce it, per se, yeah. But a Microsoft tech community blog basically confirmed that the build that went out about 2 weeks ago to both beta and dev channels is the final build. That's it. So it's 22.621.
Yeah. I had somebody calling the radio show saying, I can't get past 21H1. And now we got 22H2.
Yes. So
wait a minute. Why isn't it 22H1?
Because they're only doing once a year now.
Oh.
Right.
But we're still in the first half. So I'm confused.
Right, but they've completed this. So in other words, yeah, it's going to go to PC makers sometime over the summer.
Oh, okay. So we won't get it till September.
Right.
Yeah.
At the earliest.
Right. That's the kind of hint. Yeah. There's a September date in this document that has something to do with what PC makers can do and by when. And that kind of suggests we don't have RTM anymore, right? We just have to cope with this. Since Windows 8.1, there's been this notion of, we kind of finalized the code, but we're going to keep updating it before it goes out on PCs. There's going to be all these updates. You'll get a new PC, you'll have to install updates. Like there'll be updates post whenever that date is, of course, as we saw for the original version of Windows 11. So it's kind of it's a moving target.
It's anticlimactic now. It is, right?
It is, yeah.
And also, I bet we're still going to see them roll out some new features to Windows 11 like they did earlier this year outside of this update, right?
Right?
Like maybe in the summer, you'll see, oh, here's three new features. We're rolling it out on Patch Tuesday. Here you go.
That's weird. Right?
Well, we know what one of them is that, well, it could be, I should say, is that tabbed File Explorer experience, right?
Well,
that was something, well, I know. Well, it could be.
No.
Okay. You're like the crusher of dreams. What's going on?
I know. You know what? I feel like that has to be tested more because didn't they pull that out of the build and say, we're not ready for that one yet?
Right? I don't know. Did they?
I thought they did. I thought it was in Dev Channel and then it never went to release preview or beta, right? But there's other things.
What is H2? I mean, we've seen everything, right? Or no?
Yeah. You have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So I'm going to talk about this in my tip section, but I've installed this now on two computers, expressly for the idea of to seeing what that experience was like. And if you're, if you're using Windows 11 today, you're not going to notice a lot. Not right off the top. Not off the front or whatever. There's a bunch of things because a lot of the stuff, it's been in the Insider program for a while. So like one of the complaints about Windows 11, one of the million complaints was, you right click things and the menu looks a little different. So when you right-click the recycle bin on the desktop, it's the same as when you right-click the desktop. Okay, it's like a little thing, right? There are these personalization things related to the start menu, for example, that I think are pretty good, where you can, not great, but pretty good, where you can determine how much space each one of the sections gets, right? That's new. So you have layouts, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But as far as like, and there's the microphone feature in the taskbar, which only works with Teams, is present in this. You won't notice that unless you use the commercial version of Teams, honestly, from like a noticeable something perspective, there's not almost anything,
wasn't that, the search box has a different design where you're using like image of the day stuff in there. And
so I don't see that. Excuse me. You're right. I don't see, because what happens is I type. I don't just bring up search. I type. But if you just bring up search, yes, you will get this nonsense display. By the way, on this day in 1977, Star Wars debuted. There you go. So I guess it's not completely nonsense. Right. But it has nothing to do with search. It's just, here's some stuff we thought you might find.
It's another way of showing you MSN News and Bing stuff.
It's a little widget like. It's like a widget preview. You can turn that off at least. I will point that out. And if you just start typing, it goes away. Start typing and it's gone. It's not a lot. Sometime in the near future, I'll kind of try to list through what's new. I'm not going to do that today, but it's there's nothing profound, unfortunately.
It's not too late for Therat.com to become an Azure watching site. I'm just saying. There's a lot happening every day in Azure. Not a new widget or something.
I hear you. I will raise you one Microsoft Teams, something I would do before I would ever do that. But I don't know.
I just feel like our expectations about Windows have to change. Like we used to be thinking there'd be some huge feature, something secret, some big thing would come over the goal line. That's not going to happen anymore, right? You're going to get these incremental updates. Yeah.
It's
worse
than that, because the other thing that's not going to happen is you can make a list of like the 10 things that I really just don't like about Windows, or anyone doesn't like about Windows 11. Yeah. And you can pretty much guarantee none of that's going to change. They're just heading down this path. And this is that simplification thing I was talking about. They wanted to do 10X. They couldn't. So they're going to force part of that on us with just Windows 11. And, for power users, that could be hard. I think for average users, my wife, for example, non-technical people, I don't think they care.
It's okay.
And I think maybe it's okay.
Yeah. As SPC Casey says in the Discord, I am a professional crusher of dreams. I just want everyone to know that's my title.
Okay.
That's my job, NBA, and I'm here for it. No, I'm bringing a little dose of reality on Windows. That's all.
Yeah. Well, Wow.
Sorry.
It's nice to have that thrown back in my face.
Sorry.
So, no, it's okay. So this thing's done, so to speak. I mean, we know that doesn't mean anything. There are two other things going on with Windows 11, right? There's a release preview thing that it's just doing app updates and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't really amount to much. But there's also the dev channel, which is stuff that might appear in a future version of Windows 11, or like Mary Jo said, at some interim time in Windows 11, you know, just could be dropped on us at any point. There have been two builds since we last met, because last week's build, I think, went out on Thursday. Yeah. Last week's build had something really interesting in it. I just talked about, what did I talk about? What was the, not Active Desktop, but I guess Active Desktop, you know, that kind of stuff. And the HTML interfaces, widgets and gadgets and so forth. They're bringing some of that back, or I should say they're thinking about bringing some of that back. So one of the things that's in the second most recent dev channel build is a desktop based, they don't really call it this, but I'm going to call it a search widget. And it's a desktop search widget. No, I'm sorry. It's an internet search widget. Of course it opens Microsoft Edge. Of course it searches with Bing. Of course you can't change either one of those things. It's on the desktop. Which is kind of weird because you can't see the desktop unless you close all your, or you minimize everything, right? This has always been the central problem with these UIs. Like when they put the gadgets, I think they were called, from Windows Vista, only on the desktop in Windows 7, I think people stopped using them because you couldn't really see them unless you hit everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the issue. Or like the live tiles in the Windows 10 start menu. You know, the problem there is like they're live data. They're showing you at-a-glance information, but you're not looking at that screen. So it's kind of worthless. And so this is a feature that may or may not, you know, we'll see. It may not make it all the way through. Just while we were, I think right at the start of the show, they released a build on time this week. So we did get a new build this week to the dev channel. And again, one new feature. This is even less monumental. If you go into settings, in fact, I should do that. That's one thing I've not looked at. And I do not see it. It's weird. It's not even in my thing. So whatever. So they're adding an interface in settings so you can manage your Microsoft 365 subscription. So it's going to be up there at the top, sort of a header. In this new build, they're experimenting with also doing that for perpetual Office licenses. So you're not paying for Microsoft 365 subscription, but you bought Office 2019 home and whatever it's called, student, if they have such a thing. And that will give you the license information about that there. Mm. I don't think that's a big deal. I don't know what the point of it is, but there it is. So, okay.
I think they're just trying to make it so when you go to this account page, you'll see everything that you buy, right?
Yep. Let me go back. Where is this? Oh, there it is. No, it popped up. Okay.
I did.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a fun little thing. If you are using Windows 10 or 11, the first version of Windows 11 today, what you'll see on this account page is none of this stuff. So you can click links and it will open on the web, and then you can go to the Microsoft account website and you can see information about subscriptions and whatever else. And so they're kind of putting it into the settings interface, which I
think it's good. It
didn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Which is all we're looking for at this point. It's just like lack of maliciousness. So I mentioned there was a Windows subsystem for Android update. This is true just on Windows 11. So if you have the shipping version of Windows 11, I believe you'll be getting this. And this is not something, well, there's a little bit you will see. So mostly it's backend stuff. Some of the stuff you'll see as an end user is Android notifications will now appear as Windows Toast notifications. So they'll look seamless, which I think to me is the way it should have always been. And then there's a bunch of little things around how microphone location system services work. There's some keyboard improvements. If you have a scroll wheel in your mouse, it will work with that. It does better hardware decoding, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So just some kind of backend stuff. They upgraded it to Android version 12.1. I think the original must be on 12.0. Mm. So
it looks like a lot of stuff in this, right? Like in this update.
It looks like a lot of stuff. But when you actually go through, you're like, well, what am I going to see? Like, what would I notice? Yeah. The settings page has been updated.
Yeah.
I think the Toast is the big thing. Yeah, I think that's the biggest one. And then this is not as offensive as that stupid start menu video that we talked about when Mary Jo was up. But Microsoft released a video in the context of Computex, which is a trade show that no one's actually going to in person right now, I guess. So what they did was they made a video. So it's Panos Panay, who is executive vice president and chief product officer, because you have to have 117 characters in your title. And then corporate vice president of device partner sales, Nicole Dezen, or is it Dezen? Dezen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I, God help me, I watched this thing. I tried. I gave up.
Even you, Mary Jo. Wow.
I watched for like 5 minutes. I'm like, no, I'm not going to watch it.
Wow.
I feel like they need to do less of this. I don't know what to say. Without getting into any personal issues, I guess I'll just say there are no hard numbers for Windows 11. We don't know how many they've sold, how many licenses, how many to PC makers, how many people have upgraded. We don't know. But my God, do they put out statistics, and they're just vague statistics. And depending on the statistic, I have major or really major problems with these numbers. Like, they're all not believable. Like, they're just not believable. So let me, I'll give you two of them if I can find the two I'm looking for here. Let's see. I just want to read this so I get this exactly right. People are accepting the Windows 11 upgrade offer at twice the rate that we saw for Windows 10. Impossible. That's impossible. Windows 10 arrived in the wake of Windows 8. They were giving it away for free. Everybody wanted to get off of Windows 8. Everybody. Like, that's not, it's not possible. It's just not possible. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Windows 10 is great. Now, is there some enthusiast base that wants to move forward? Yeah, of course, of course. You had a, I mean, they really siphoned this thing down so that only some people got it too. The rollout has been very slow. If you look at any external data from IDC, Gartner, the stuff we looked at from AdDuplex, whatever, you choose your source. Every one of those people, those companies will tell you this thing has been going out really slow. And Microsoft's like, no, it's the fastest we've ever had. Like, okay, impossible. But there's the thing. Business adoption of Windows 11. Now, this one, this is the worst one. This is the faster adoption than we've seen in any previous version of Windows. Impossible. And I say that because I've been alive. Because we witnessed Windows Vista. We witnessed how long Vista took to come to market. We saw what it was. We saw that nobody wanted it. And there's not a major business on earth that upgraded to Windows Vista. They all waited for Windows 7. And then they went to town. And we know for a fact that Microsoft sold an average of 20 million copy licenses of Windows 7 over its entire three-year time frame every single month. We know that this is a fact. It's documented. This has not happened. This is impossible. There is a low single-digit percentage of Windows computers in the world that are running Windows 11 right now, period. This is not true. So I don't know, you know, quality. Windows 11 has the highest quality score of any version of Windows that we've ever shipped. What? What does that even mean? I don't know where these things come from. So again, this is not... It's not offensive like that start menu video, which is gross, but it's like, I don't know where this stuff, I don't know how to make this make sense with reality. I don't know how to, I just don't know what
you
to
can't.
Say. I don't know.
You can't.
He talks about this new era of Windows. This is brand, like it's some, you know, like it's not a minor like feature update to Windows 10. Yeah. Hybrid workforce, blah, blah, blah. The PC is more essential to everything we're doing. You know this. We have, this is how we said it, more than 1.4 billion users around the world. Wow. Well, I've been writing about the history of Windows, and I know that in 2014, someone stood up on stage and said it was 1.5 billion. So has that number gone down? And if so, how is the PC more essential to everything we're doing than it was 8 years ago or whatever that is?
Yeah.
I have trouble with the numbers. So
that's why I didn't watch it. I kind of saw where it was going and I'm like, no.
Yeah, it never gets better. It never gets better.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Look, I like Windows 11. I really do. And I have a problem with this stuff. There's stuff that they talk about that's fantastic. The accessibility stuff in Windows 11, awesome. The UI, great. Windows 365, fantastic. You know, the PC market has kind of rebounded because of COVID. Excellent. I have no problems with that. Secured Core PC and Pluton.
Yeah.
Their first part is ship this stuff disabled. Intel has already said this is superfluous because what they're doing is already better. And we don't even know why Microsoft is doing this. You know, there's stuff like that. So, and that's whatever. We can talk about anything, but I have a problem with the numbers, the 2X stuff, yeah. You know, fastest, best, most high quality. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like in general, this is the direction we're going with numbers, right? Like we see this on earnings calls too, right? Like it's five times the demand that we had last year. Yeah. Well, we don't know what that number was either. So who knows, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I think this is the new normal, sadly. And we got to just.
Yeah. This is
except it.
This has been going around for a while. The thing I really miss though are I miss hard numbers of any kind. Like so,
right.
Windows 8. Although eventually that went south, and then Windows 10. There were regular updates about this is what we sold.
How far along? Yep.
And we have not gotten a single number. We get a lot of platitudes, you know.
Yeah.
But we are closing in on the 1 year point from when they announced it, and then we're, I guess, about 9 months into the year since they started selling it, and they have yet to provide us not even once, not one number. Because I think that number would undercut the other stuff they're saying.
I don't think we're going to see a number. I don't. I'm pretty sure we're not.
Yeah.
Not for a long time. Okay. Not until maybe Windows 10 is obsolete. Then maybe we'll see a number.
Yeah. I don't mean to obsess over this stuff, but I feel like someone has to hold these guys accountable. And they're not going to do it themselves, that's for sure.
That's why we need the Thorot bot.
Wait a minute. What's the Thorot bot? Is this going to be like a RoboCop? Is he going to come in and say, "Hello, citizen, surrender"?
Whenever you need Frank Shaw. Snarky comment.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Frank Shaw came up with this. He's the, what's his job? He's like in charge of.
The head of communications. Yeah.
Communications at Microsoft. So he does like a little intro video for the press before build, before every show. And in this one, he mentioned that he was going to, he said something like, I wanted to create a bot that would be like sarcastic and mean. And then he's like, oh, I made a Thorot bot.
That's awesome. Like, that's great. Crazy. You're famous.
I don't think I'm mean.
No, but, you know, you're sarcastic.
I wouldn't, right? Yeah. I wouldn't think that.
Yeah. You might feel that way if you worked at Microsoft, if you're Frank Shine.
Yeah.
Sure.
He's so mean. He made me cry.
You don't understand. There are people behind these products. You're like, all right, I don't believe there are. No.
No, but that's okay. That's the eternal issue. If you're a journalist of any kind, sure, you might have empathy, but you also have to tell the truth. You know, and my empathy lies with users, not the company, right?
You guys have watched, maybe not Mary Jo, but there's a show on Apple TV called Ted Lasso, which is one of the best TV shows ever made. And I feel like I am that journalist guy, the guy from The Independent.
He stands up. He's so funny.
Yeah, he always stands out. He says, whatever his name is from The Independent. And like everyone just repeats it back. Like now he stands up and everyone just chants
it
to him.
It's so funny. I love it.
He always says exactly the same thing. But he's just kind of a jerk and he kind of, you know, he's very sour. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much
what You could be, you know, the anti-hero in the Ted Lasso show. That'd be good.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Thorot, Thorot.com. Yeah. Why do you guys suck so bad?
I also feel like the guy when the that player goes on to TV and he's just so brutally honest.
Yeah.
He's like, well, what do you think about Jamie? He's like, Jamie Todd is a Muppet. You know, he's just like so brutal. I'm like, that is just, it's perfect. He just doesn't care. They ask him a question. He just goes,
I love it.
He doesn't even answer.
It does sound like you.
You should watch this show, Mary Jo. It's fantastic. Anyway, you'd have to pay Apple for something. But.
I know. Yeah, that's a no.
I know.
Wouldn't even give them $5 a month to watch Ted Lasso? Really?
No, it's screw fantastic. Those guys.
No, and they call Paul Thorot mean and sarcastic. You know, there's people who work at that product.
Yeah, exactly. There are people who work at Apple, Mary Jo.
Are they Muppets? I think they're Muppets.
You're probably right. No, we know that there are people in all of these companies, and they work hard, and they care, and they do a good job, and they want to make the best product. And you know what? This is part of our job, is to tell them when they don't. Right. And they should appreciate that. We're
it's
feedback.
Tough love. Tough love.
I know Steve Jobs appreciated it, you know, why wouldn't everyone else?
I'm still not invited to Apple events.
All these years later. In stone. When he says something, it's over.
It must be there's a gold plate somewhere inside Apple. Mm-hmm. These people must never come to an Apple event.
Exactly.
And I'm on it.
There's not enough time can pass.
Where are we?
Xbox.
Oh, really? We did the subsystem? We kind of talked about Android.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it. Mary Jo, you have the rest of the day off.
Let's do it.
Paul Theroux. It's a short one. It's a little tiny one.
So I didn't realize this was news. In the Nadella keynote, he just kind of casually threw it. By the way, a hard number. He said there are over 10 million people using Xbox Game Pass.
That's good.
I was like, yeah, good. Okay. But I thought we already knew that. So then the next, later in the day or whatever, people were writing about it, like, oh, he finally revealed a number. I'm like, wait, but that was new?
Is it or isn't it?
I don't know. I thought it was known, but I guess this is new.
It's a reasonable number. Does that match their hopes?
Well, we're never going to know that. But I will I'll put that in a little bit of perspective. Just off the top of my head, I think the only numbers we ever got for Xbox Live Gold, which is sort of the start of this subscription kind of a thing, was in the mid-40s, like 46 million, something like that. So for them to have a quarter of that paying to actually, not stream games, but to, in most cases, download the games, but, to have access to that library, kind of the Spotify model, which is streaming, so maybe that's not exactly the right model. But you know what I'm saying? The idea is you have this access to this tremendous collection. You can download them to your console and play them. If you pay for the most expensive version, you do get Xbox Cloud Gaming as well, which is the streaming service. So we don't know how many of each one, et cetera. But the two, the console and the PC version of the service are $9.99 a month. So I would say Xbox Live Gold was, $5 a month. And then the big expensive one, Ultimate, with the streaming is $14.99 a month. So,
They didn't break it down, so we don't know which is
which. No, that's way too much detail. They'll never do that. that's crazy.
What would you guess? Half and half?
No. Yeah, maybe. I think the Ultimate version is a great value if you're going to play those games. Like, you have to want to play a lot of games. That's true of any of those subscriptions. But you want to play games all the time and do it across various devices, maybe while you're commuting or sitting out at the couch or whatever, watching TV. I think it's an awesome value. So, yeah, it could be as high as 50-50.
Yeah. So do the math, kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it kind of, when you stack it up money-wise.
It's good money.
It's probably pretty damn close to what they were getting on
100 million?
Xbox Live.
No, more than 100 million.
Live Gold.
140 million, 70 million plus 1,500 million.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
All I know is it's a lot.
It's a lot. So it's good money. It's good money. 140 million plus 300 plus, never mind.
Here we go. See? It's hard. Plus, with people not getting the consoles for a while,
I need to plug my brain into an Azure computer instance. You got one?
Mm-hmm. If we only had an MPU.
I need an MPU.
How many times have I said that?
I need an MPU.
Zero. Okay.
Okay.
This is potentially big news. Well, no, this is literally big news. So one of the open secrets in the Microsoft world with Xbox is this console, no matter which one we're talking about, has never sold well in Japan. And back in the day, when you think about the original Xbox console, it's kind of this huge, heavy tank. The story was always, you don't understand. People in Japan are all kind of, highly dense areas, small apartments. They can't fit this thing in there. They would buy PlayStations. Although, honestly, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 5, those are humongous consoles. But PlayStation has always outsold Xbox. They also have those Japanese games. It's a very particular market. And Microsoft has kind of struggled in that area. But apparently, and this is according to two different sets of data, the Xbox Series S, which is that small, cute one, has outsold the PS5 in Japan for the first time ever. And I mean, this is the first time Xbox has ever outsold any version of PS5. And there's a figure here. I got to find this number. This is crazy. Microsoft, over 20 years, sold 2.3 million Xboxes. That's it in Japan. Over three and a half generations.
Wow, that's nothing.
It's nothing. And for them to have the one they did the best with, by the way, was the Xbox 360. And that was the version, you know, the first one was white, kind of like an Apple product. And then they got smaller and even sleeker. You could make a case, like you could see where that one would have been something the Japanese market might have embraced. The Xbox One, remember, they went back to that ginormous thing. It got smaller over time, but that was the one that did the worst. So this is not only doing better than the previous generation, but it's kind of the best they've done comparatively. They've never beat, like I said, they've never beaten Sony. So to even do that for a couple of months, which is what I think the time frame is here, is, you know, it's pretty good. Now they got to work in the game situation. Obviously, there are certain Final Fantasy type games that are only available in Japan, but that's still big news. And what's the last one? This is nothing. I don't even know why this is here. I think I was padding it. I was trying to get back at Mary Jo. I wanted more Xbox stories.
I know your tricks.
Just pad it. It's okay. Pad it, man. No.
Yeah. Anyway, Microsoft just has a new ad campaign for the Xbox Series S. And this, the deal here is, you got to remember, when they launched this console generation, Sony had two versions. One had an optical disc, one didn't. But on the Microsoft side, the Xbox Series S actually has really serious differences in the configuration, GPU, CPU, et cetera. It's kind of aimed at this market where it's like 1080p, 60 frames a second. The big console, the Series X, is 4K, 60 frames a second. It depends on the game. It depends on what you're doing. And what they found is that actually a lot of games run, well, all games run great. But I mean, games run better on the S than I think even Microsoft expected. And I think they're starting this new marketing thing where they're like, look, this is actually an excellent next-gen console. It's really competitive. And by the way, it's very available and super inexpensive. It's small and cute. I love this thing. I've been using it probably for the past six, since Christmas at least. What is that? Almost 6 months. That's all I got, Mary Jo. I'm sorry. I tried to keep it going.
Oh, good man. Like, oh, man. I was hoping for so much more.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Me too.
There was that one weird week when she was gone. There were like 12 stories.
Yeah, wasn't that
like the stars just kind of aligned?
So weird.
No, it just happened. It was the weirdest thing.
It was good. Good timing.
Get it out of the way. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I could go through it again now.
No. It's okay. It's fine. It's quite all right. We don't want to.
We have some great back of the book stories.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. That's coming up. In just a second, we go to the back of the book. But first, a word from Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. Today's, that's a good word for it, bumpy hybrid work world. We know the knowledgeable people at CDW really get what it takes to keep your business productive and protected. They understand that while your needs may change today, tomorrow, and next week, and all the time, securing your hybrid workforce will always be a priority. That's why CDW works with Intel and can help design a secure remote management solution that works for you. With Intel's vPro platform, powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors and custom configured by CDW, you get hardware-based multi-layer security that will protect against threats. But Intel's vPro platform doesn't stop there. It gives you peace of mind for your business and business class performance all in one. Let's talk remote manageability. No matter where your hybrid workforce is, management can access, control, and fix devices from anywhere, even outside the firewall, which means no matter where your teams are working from, you're still in control. And when you're in control, I think you can breathe a little bit better, a little sigh of relief. With Intel's vPro platform, powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors, your teams will be more productive and power through disruptions, letting you and your business focus on the things that really matter. For secure remote management and security, trust Intel vPro and IT orchestration by CDW. People who get it, or is it people who get IT? I guess it's both. Learn more at cdw.com/intel client. And thank you, Intel and CDW, for your support of Windows Weekly. You support us by going to cdw.com/intel client. Looking forward to my 12th Gen Intel Core processor with the vPro platform. Someday. It's in China right now, but someday.
It'll be in June.
It'll be here. No, I think, you know, they said it's on track to be delivered on time. So I think they probably have some idea of how long these holds take and et cetera, et cetera. Tip of the week from Paul Thurrott.
Yeah, so it's never too early to upgrade to Windows 11 22H2.
Can I get it now? Do I have to be in fast ring?
You can get it now.
No?
So there's two ways to do it. Well, I should say two easy ways to do it. The first is to just enroll in the beta channel of the Windows Insider Program and settings, right? You go to Windows Update. Windows Insider Program and just enroll. It's like before you have to reboot and you'll get the build, right? The thing to remember to do there, and I would tell you what it was if this thing ever just came up. God damn it. But there's an interface in Windows Update, Windows Insider Program, or where you can check a box that says, when the next version of Windows is released, unenroll me from the Windows Insider Program, right? You want to do that, right? Oh, there it is. It says, stop getting preview builds, right? So I am now queued for unenrollment. It says unenroll this device.
Is this the window slamming?
Windows slamming?
Is this your slamming the window, closing the window?
Closing the magic window.
Oh, closing the magic window. Yeah, so they give you a way to get out of it. The idea here is you want to get into the, where can I get this build now? I can get it in the beta channel.
Right.
Okay, so I enroll in the beta channel.
Right.
But I don't want to keep getting beta builds.
So you open and close the window at the same time.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, they'll do it automatically. Oh, okay. Microsoft will automatically close it for you when it's time.
Okay,
so that's actually a nice feature.
That's cool.
You can do that. Yeah. So I've done that on one computer. That works fine. Actually, I will say installing Windows 11 that way to me took a long time. I want to say from start to stop it was over an hour. Which, you know, if you're a Mac user, you're probably okay with. But on Windows,
hey,
it's actually hey. See what I did there?
Yeah, it's usually 2 hours actually, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's Mac updates are tough.
Yeah,
even small ones. But yeah, this one it's supposed to take. Remember, these things are supposed to take like 20 minutes. I don't know. That's a long time. On this computer I'm using now, I will now say, I downloaded the ISO because one of the interesting things about this release, so they don't do this for every build. In fact, they don't do it for many builds. But 2 weeks ago when they released this build, they made the ISO available. So I downloaded the ISO, ran setup from there, upgraded that way, rebooted, et cetera. That one actually took 20 to 25 minutes. That wasn't long at all. The interesting thing about doing it that way is this computer is not enrolled in the Insider program, right? So I got that from, at the time, it was both beta and dev channel. That's what that build is associated with. So on this computer, when I go to Windows Update, Windows Insider program, again, I just had it up. Why did I?
Don't hit return.
I know. Okay. I did check the box that said unenroll this thing, even though I'm not enrolled. It actually let me do that. I think somehow it understood that the code I installed came from the Windows Insider program. So on both installs, regardless of how I did it, it's giving me the option to automatically unenroll. And that's what you're looking for, right? So it's May. This thing probably won't be generally available until, you know, September at the earliest. I'm betting it's going to be October, but let's say September, October. It doesn't really matter. I never enrolled in the Windows Insider program, but it knows that's where this came from. And I queued this thing. I said I queued it for unenrollment. You could also unenroll this device immediately. That will wipe out your version of Windows and install a fresh copy of Windows. Don't do that, unless that's what you want to do. Anyway, the point of this is you can get this now if you want it. Is there some compelling reason to get this? No, but you're watching the show. Of course you want this. This is what we do. So it is available if you want that now. And I think next week my app of the week is probably going to be this camo thing I'm using because I think like this has worked out pretty well, but I'm going to test it more. I'll do some more shows and see how it goes. But this week it is YouTube. So YouTube is, I don't talk about YouTube a lot. I actually watch YouTube every single day. It's possibly the video streaming service I use the most. But there was a feature that was available to YouTube premium subscribers, which I am one, by the way. I have to say one of the things about YouTube, if you're going to watch it a lot, pay to get rid of the ads. I don't know how anyone watches YouTube with ads. But there's a feature available to everyone now, not just premium subscribers, but also just regular users, that actually shows you a graph of the most frequently replayed parts of any video. So you can actually use this to jump to the parts of the video that people watch the most, which is kind of interesting, right? Like if you're a YouTuber, like you make YouTube videos, one of the things you learn is where people drop off in a video. So like a lot of people watch the first 30 seconds and go, eh, and then they leave. But if people watch it all the way through, there might be interesting parts where they go back and they watch it again and again. And you can actually get that in the player now. That's pretty cool. So also if you were in, if you buy movies from Google or if you buy movies from services that are in, is it Movies Anywhere or whatever that's called?
Yeah, that old Disney Movies Anywhere.
Yeah,
it's just Movies Anywhere.
Pops up in YouTube too, right? And one of the things I found with YouTube is like when we've done home swaps is sometimes I can't get my apps working on a TV, but YouTube works everywhere, right? So like a lot of my content, we've only been able to play through YouTube, which works fine. So,
nice.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good idea. Yeah. Yeah. Put it in the Movies Anywhere, and then you can always play it on YouTube.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, play it anywhere. I'll play it as in more places, not anywhere.
Yeah. But,
you know,
yeah.
It's Movies in More Places of what they should call it.
Movies in More Places, but not exactly anywhere. And it, yeah, it depends.
It's not
on
anywhere, the, asterisk, but also SP2, R2. Yeah.
Should I, my new Dell, should I push for Windows 22 H2 or just stick with the Windows 11?
You know, I feel like I'm going to be blamed when something goes wrong.
You are?
Yeah. I don't see any reason not to. Okay. I don't see any reason.
I'll do the magic window trick. Good.
This version of Windows was tested.
Oh, like the last one. By dozens.
You know, yeah. I'll just throw that out there. It's been testing for 9 months. It's, you know, so.
So it should be, in theory, even more stable.
No promises, but yeah, should be.
Okay. No, I'm not going to hold you. I won't hold you responsible.
Really?
Yeah, I promise.
You say that
I
now.
I promise. No, you know me. I'm going to be asking you all sorts of Windows questions as soon as it gets here. All sorts.
You're going to say, why is there a picture of a balloon when I go to search? I don't understand. What's that?
Mary Jo Foley, time for your enterprise pick of the week.
Doing another Linux pick. I've been doing a lot of these, which is kind of disturbing.
Thank you.
I talked recently about Microsoft's internal Linux distributions. They have two that I know of. One is called CBL, Common Base Linux Mariner. One's called CBL Delridge. It turns out the Mariner CBL team just started a blog, which is very interesting. They started it at the start of May. It's on GitHub. So if you go to GitHub and you search for the Mariner dev blog, it's there. And in the blog introduction, they say, we're highlighting the features and changes to the CBL Mariner distribution for the broader Linux community outside Microsoft.
Oh, interesting.
Our intent is to update this blog monthly and give you more of a technical perspective. We want to outline the changes and the reasons behind some of our design decisions that we're making. So that's kind of interesting that they're doing that. And it kind of makes me say, why are they doing it? If you care about that and you're kind of intrigued what Microsoft is doing with its own Linux, you should go to GitHub and search for the Mariner blog. And then I also just wanted to remind people, if you too want to follow along with all the build news we talked about earlier today, you can download and check out the Build Book of News. Just search anywhere for Build 2022 Book of News, and you get the full book that we got when we were being briefed, even a little more than we got when we were being briefed, all with hyperlinks so that you can go right to the posts that explain all the features that you care about. And while we're doing Windows Weekly, I'm watching, there's a talk on at Build right now with Rich Turner, who we already referenced. And he said, Project Volterra, more details will be coming this summer. So you're not going to have to wait till the end of the year to find out.
Somewhere in Australia, probably.
Yeah, that's a good point. Summer isn't summer.
I bet it's here because he lives here. Yeah. So
cool. Yeah. That's good.
Yep.
That's exciting. Yep. You got a code name for us, Mary Jo?
Yep. So Zach Bowden over at Windows Central, who is very good with the code names, he said the code name for Project Volterra, even though Project Volterra is a code name, it had its own code name internally, and it was called Black Rock. That makes sense when you see what the box looks like. It looks like a black rock. Black rock. Right? It's like, that's it.
Well, plus that video they made was all about black rocks.
That's right.
It was. Black and rocks. Lava. There were lots of like rocks being cracked open. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So for what it's worth, there's your code name within a code name. Black Rock and Project Volterra.
It is odd that a project that has a code name has an internal code name.
It is. Right. It is odd.
All right. I'm ready for some beer. I don't know about you, but I am ready for some beer.
Memorial Day weekend this weekend here in the United States. Kind of the unofficial start of summer, right?
Woo!
So I'm like, okay, what is a beer that people like to have when they're outside, barbecues, hopefully weather permitting? And there's one that immediately comes to mind from Bell's Brewing called Oberon Ale. They call it their beer that signifies the start of summer. And I've seen it in stores here now. It's a very light wheat ale for people who like wheat beers, only 5.8%. And some people drink it with a slice of orange in it. I've tried it. It's not bad. But it's a very good beer. One of my neighbors in my building, this is his beer. Like when this comes out every year, he just immediately starts buying cases of this beer. That's his beer.
That's serious. Okay.
Yeah. He's very serious about his Oberon. But yeah, you can find it anywhere pretty much. It's in cans and it's around. It's a good one. It's a very tasty wheat ale if you like wheat beers.
Is Oberon, does that mean something? The word Oberon?
He was, of course, the king of the fairies in the Midsummer Night Dream, but I don't think that's what they're talking about. Maybe they are. I don't know.
Maybe.
Where is Bell's? Is it a local? Is it New York?
No, they're in Michigan.
Michigan. Well, Oberon, Midsummer Night Dream. I'm thinking that's probably it.
You think that's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're in Kalamazoo. They're in Kalamazoo. Kalamazoo. Sorry. Yep.
There's an Alvaro.
No, that's wrong. Wait, I have to give you the right place where Bell's is. I'm like, it's not Kalamazoo, is it? Or is it? They're blocking me for not being 21. Come on, guys. I'm way past that year.
Don't you hate that?
Way past Don't that year. Don't
you
hate that?
You can't even see a game trailer if you're under 21. But if you want to buy a long gun.
It's Kalamazoo. I'm right. Yeah, it is.
Kalamazoo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, kids. I think we have to call it a day.
Yep. I think we did as much damage as we could and build.
Now the time has come to say goodbye.
To all the family. Mary Jo. Paul Thurrott.
Thurrott Bot. And
Mary Jo Foley is at her ZDNet blog. Allaboutmicrosoft.com is the easy way to find it. That's really lots of coverage of Build there. And more to come, I'm sure. Paul Thurrott writes at Thurrott.com. Become a premium member so you can read the history, Windows history series he's been doing. It's really great, really interesting. And, of course, his field guide to Windows 10 is at leanpub.com. We get them together, the two of them. He's on the left, she's on the right.
I'm a little bit country. She's
a little
bit
rock and roll. I think it's true. Every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. 1800 UTC if you want to join us live. You can go to live.twit.tv. There's live audio and video streams there. If you're watching or listening live, chat live at irc.twit.tv because they're all doing the same thing. So are the folks in our Club Twit via our fabulous Club Twit Discord. There's some good stuff coming up in the club. We've got Stacey's book club, Termination Shock by Neal Stephenson is the book of the month. Next month, Alex Lindsay will do an AMA with Aunt Pruitt. We got a lot of other great stuff planned, including we're hoping sometime soon to launch a show with one of our Twit stars. The nice thing about the club is it allows us to launch new shows like This Week in Space without advertising support because the club Twit members support it with their dollars.
Did you talk to the author? I forgot his name. I'm sorry. Of
Trip Mickle. Yeah. That was great. He's fascinating.
Nice.
I am 35 minutes away from finishing that book, according to Audible, and I just don't want it to end.
Yeah. Well, you know, I should have told him this, but I was saying in our Twit social, our Mastodon instance, that it kind of reminds the three of us of those great computer science books like G. Pascal Zachary's Showstopper, yeah. or yep. Tracy Kidder's Soul of a New Machine. You know, and so it's that kind of story of an era at a company, and it's yeah. fun to read that.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
Of course, Mary Jo has no interest. She's just, unless you want to hate read it, well, you can hate read
I,
it.
No, I want to hate read actually, it in a way. Although this is Apple, right? So
it's
maybe
all Apple.
I would like it.
A lot of it,
but it's all bad about Apple. Right?
No, you know, I mean, it's not all bad or all good. It's pretty honest.
Yeah.
It makes you think that Johnny Ive was kind of a dick. Although I asked Tripp,
but
Tim Cook too. Tim Cook doesn't come off all that great.
No, I asked Tripp that. He said, "No, it wasn't negative." I said, "Well." Maybe it's just, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder.
They do such a good job of managing the message that I think to Apple fans it will feel negative, but it's just weird.
Right. So maybe I'd like it then.
I really do.
It's interesting.
I like those kind of sagas that explain exactly. why a company yeah, is exactly. the way it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All the stuff, like they were like, you know, iPhone production dropped like 8% one quarter, and they were like, and then you find out what actually happened.
Yeah.
And compare it to the nonsense that they said publicly.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's really
that that's cool.
vital. For people
that is good.
People like me who are following this, you know, day in, day out
yeah.
through that whole mm-hmm. period, hearing yep. this backstory is always yep. interesting.
No, that's great.
Like what
that's
really incredible. Was happening.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so great. It's a great book.
That is on our, it's a triangulation. So even though I don't do the show mm-hmm. weekly anymore, but every once in a while we'll get a good interview.
Yeah.
And so I put that on the triangulation feed and on the Twit events feed. So if you subscribe to either of those,
I'll go watch that.
You will get it. Yeah, he was good. Mm-hmm. At first he was a little reticent, but I think I drew him out over the mm-hmm. period of the hour.
Well, he knows you're not invited to the Apple event, so how trustworthy?
Yeah. oh, he's describing the Steve Jobs Theater where they hold these events now. Each right. seat in the Steve Jobs
$1,700.
$14,000.
Right.
What?
Each seat, because they're made of the same leather.
Yep. Italian leather, probably.
Italian, find it. Same Ferrari leather that they use in Ferrari automobiles.
Yep.
The mechanism, the whole thing. There's 2,000 seats in there, $14,000 each. And that's the other thing that's interesting in this book is like the money they spend on silly things. And it's all that was all Johnny Ive, you know.
I think I might like it. It sounds just full enough.
Walls, they built that new building and everyone was walking into doors.
Yes. Full glass. Put dots on the doors so they wouldn't walk into them and they call them Johnny Ive's Tears.
Johnny Ive's Tears, yeah. So excellent. Nice. I really think you'd like the book. I really do.
Anyway, that we did that. That actually wasn't part of Club Twit, but we do have a lot of stuff that is only Club Twit, like the Untitled Linux Show, Dick DiBartolo's GizFizz. There's a lot of stuff in there. That goes in the Twit Plus feed. If, you know, Paul and Mary Jo are members. If you'd like to be a member, $7 a month, go to twit.tv/clubtwit. That money goes not into my pocket. It goes directly to support programming. You know, it helps us a lot, to be honest with you, during the ups and downs of COVID. It's been very, very helpful. So twit.tv/clubtwit. And I think you get lots of benefits, including ad-free versions of all the shows, because you're giving us money. We don't need to get advertisers on those. Paul, Mary Jo, whoops, more beer. Paul and Mary Jo, thank you. I pressed the beer button by accident. Thank you for being here. Come back again, please, next week. And we will see you then on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye, dozers.
The world is changing rapidly. So rapidly, in fact, that it's hard to keep up. That's why Micah Sargent and I, Jason Howell, talk with the people making and breaking the tech news on Tech News Weekly every Thursday. They know these stories better than anyone, so why not get them to talk about it in their own words? Subscribe to Tech News Weekly, and you won't miss a beat every Thursday at twit.tv.